Good. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the meeting of the State Coastal Conservancy. My name is Doug Bosco. I chair the Conservancy, and I'd like to take this opportunity to introduce all the members of our board who are present. To my immediate left is Brian Cash. Brian is representing the Natural Resources Agency. And next to Brian is Mars Gutierrez-Gradinch. Mars is appointed by the State Assembly and is our vice chair. To my far, or to my immediate right, is Madeline Cavallari, who is representing the State Coastal Commission. And next to Madeline is Elizabeth Urey from the Department of Finance. Out in television land on Zoom, we have Jerry Hallisey.
Not yet.
Not yet. Jerry, not yet, Hallisey, who's one of my dearest friends and is appointed by the governor, and Jerry will be joining us a little later on. Is Kara with us? Kara Woodruff?
Yes. Greetings.
Kara, welcome. Kara is with Senator John Laird's office and for a long time has joined us. And are there any other oversight members? I don't think so. All right. And then Amy Hutzel is our executive officer. Ryan Berghoff is our senior staff counsel. And Paul Johnson is our board clerk. I hope you'll all forgive me for wearing my raincoat. It is freezing cold in this building. Since we met last, our national administration has informed us that there is no such thing as global warming. I believe it today. He also has told us that there is no such thing as carbon dioxide. There's no such thing as methane, no such thing as climate change, sea level rise, or any of those other things that our little group has been working on for so long. But I hope what's coming out of the national administration will not deter us from keeping up with our work and maybe doubling down on everything that we do, because, frankly, I think it's very important work. Now, with that word of inspiration, I will, before all of you fall asleep, I will turn the meeting over to Paul or Amy to give everyone some advice as to how to approach the board.
Great. Thank you, Chair Bosco. So we're at the Oakland State Building. If you're attending in person and you want to speak on any item, please fill out a speaker card, which are on the table near the cookies, and pass that card along to Paul Johnson, the board clerk, who will pass it on to Chair Bosco. And this includes grantees and partners who want to speak on their project. So be sure to indicate on that form which item you want to speak about. If you're in this room, please also make sure your cell phones and electronic devices are silent during the meeting. You have two options for watching the meeting remotely, the webcast and Zoom. If you want to speak on an item, you need to join the meeting on Zoom. If you don't plan to speak on an item, you can watch the meeting on the webcast. If you're on the webcast now and you want to speak on an item, go to the Conservancy website at scc.ca.gov, click on Meetings and Notices, and register to speak, and you will be emailed a Zoom link, and you can join on Zoom. On Zoom, use the raise hand button or press star 9 if you're using your phone to speak at the appropriate time on the agenda, and we will call on people and move them over to make comments. And that takes maybe 10 seconds or so, and it will look like you're getting disconnected, but you're not. And then you have to unmute yourself to speak. We cannot unmute you. Spanish translation is available for the meeting if you join by Zoom. There is a globe icon at the bottom of the Zoom screen, and you can choose Spanish. So those are the logistics, Chairman Bosco.
All right. Paul, will you please call the roll?
Ms. Cavalieri?
Here.
Mr. Cash?
Here.
Ms. Gutierrez-Graudinch?
Here.
Ms. Urey?
Here.
Mr. Hallisey? Ms. Sterling? Chair Bosco?
Here.
Quorum is present.
All right. Next, we have approval of the minutes of our November 20th, 2025 meeting. Are there any additions or corrections to the minutes? Okay. Mr. Cash, would you like to move approval?
Yes. Yeah. Move approval.
Good.
Second.
Okay. It's been moved and seconded. We approve the minutes. Paul, will you please call the roll?
Ms. Cavalieri?
Aye.
Mr. Cash?
Aye.
Ms. Gutierrez-Graudinch?
Aye.
Ms. Urey?
Aye.
Chair Bosco?
Aye.
The minutes are approved.
Okay, next we have consent items. These are matters of less than $500,000 or continuations of previously approved projects. Are there any public comments on the consent calendar? Hello? Are there any
public comments?
Okay.
Oh, wait, we have one hand raised.
They lowered their hand.
They left.
Okay. What? No?
No?
Yes? No?
Wait.
We have one hand raised. Apologies. Jessica Ochoa, go ahead and speak.
Good morning. Good morning. I do apologize for that. It didn't light up right away, so I wasn't sure if I was raising my hand. I just wanted to say I'm Jessica Ochoa, Recreation Superintendent with the City of Riverside Parks Recreation and Community Services Department. I'm here on behalf of our department to thank the Coastal Conservancy for considering our grant proposal. We are truly appreciative of the opportunity and look forward to the possibilities of obviously partnering with your organization to expand and enhance these opportunities that the grant will provide to our Riverside residents and their access to the Santa Ana River here in Riverside. Thank you so much.
All right, thank you. Are there any items that the members of the board would like to take off the consent calendar? If not, Ms. Cavalieri, would you like to move approval of the consent?
Yes, move approval.
Okay. And Mr. Cash, would you like to second?
Second.
Okay, Paul, will you please call the roll?
Yes. Ms. Cavalieri?
Aye.
Mr. Cash?
Aye.
Ms. Gutierrez-Graudinch?
Aye.
Ms. Urey?
Aye.
Chair Bosco?
Aye.
The consent calendar is approved.
Great. Okay, next we have the executive officer's report. Amy, would you like to take over with that?
Great. Thank you, Chair Bosco. First, I want to introduce some new staff at the Coastal Conservancy working in our South Coast program. Christy Kehoe is previously with NOAA, and we were very happy to have her come over to the Coastal Conservancy. And then Olivia Van Dam was previously at Cal Academy of Sciences, and she also served as one of our Explore the Coast Advisory Board members several years ago and presented to the board. So very happy to have the two of them join us in the South Coast program.
Great.
Yeah. And then I wanted to, and actually, is Katya here? No. Okay. We have a Sea Grant fellow leaving, so Katya Beener. So we'll send her virtually a big thanks. And then I wanted to provide some budget news for the Coastal Conservancy, starting with the Prop 4 rulemaking saga that I have emailed about and given you updates on multiple times. It is hopefully coming to an end. Prop 4 did not include an exemption from rulemaking like previous bonds. At our November board meeting, the board adopted emergency regulations for Prop 4 grant making. The Office of Administrative Law indicated to us that they would reject those regulations, so we withdrew them back in November. And since then, the legislature has been working to address the issue. A budget bill, Junior, that exempts the FY25-26 Prop 4 funds will likely go to the governor for signature in a matter of days. And that may be followed by legislation that addresses future appropriations of Prop 4 funding. Today, staff will be recommending grants for about a dozen, I think it's exactly a dozen, projects that use the FY25-26 Prop 4 funds. We've included a condition in the resolutions for those projects that will only allow us to move the grants forward pending the governor's signature on the budget bill, Junior, on the legislation. And I also want to note that the Prop 4 Wildfire Resilience Funds had a rulemaking exemption, so the conditional approval is not necessary when we get to those wildfire funds at the end of the agenda today. Are there any questions about the rulemaking? Brian's like, no questions about rulemaking.
We'll have a brief quiz on.
Oh, my gosh. Yes. Learned a lot. Yeah.
Just for the record, it's AB 107, in case there are any nerds out there that want to look it up. And then AB 35 is probably going to be the final solution for that. So.
Yeah. Yeah. So we're getting there.
And that should be the next week or two.
I'm going to look at Lizzie.
Yes, that's our expectation. Both bills are just heard in the Senate and Assembly on Tuesday.
And that'll be a two-thirds vote so that it'll go into effect right away?
Budget bill, yes, will go into effect right away for those current year appropriations, 25-26.
Great. We've learned a lot about the Administrative Procedures Act. Okay, and then I wanted to just give a summary of the governor's FY26-27 budget, which was released in January and includes the following amounts for the Conservancy. Prop 4 Coastal Resilience was $30.8 million. Prop 4 West Coyote Hills, which is in Fullerton, just over $23 million. Prop 4 Coyote Valley in Santa Clara County, just over $14 million. And then the Environmental License Plate Fund, which we use for Explore the Coast, $225,000. The Coastal Access Fund, also used for Explore the Coast, $600,000. Sea Otter Tax Checkoff Fund, $165,000. And then there are five new positions for the Coastal Conservancy in the governor's budget, three project managers, one environmental justice tribal liaison, and one accountant. And then there's support dollars for the operations of the Conservancy. So that's our the proposed 26-27 budget. And we are obviously, we have a lot of 25-26 Prop 4 funding, as I've summarized at previous board meetings, and we're starting to move that funding forward today. Next up, Evan Sloan, the Deputy Executive Officer, is going to provide a strategic plan progress report.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair Bosco and members of the Conservancy Board. I'm Evan Borgnes-Sloan, and I'll be presenting on the third year of progress on implementing the Conservancy's 2023 to 2027 strategic plan. I previously presented year two progress on this strategic plan in February of last year. This is the third progress report on implementing the plan, covering activities from January 2023 to through January 2026, approximately 60% of the way through the five-year strategic plan timeframe. The Conservancy has been able to make significant advances on our strategic plan goals and objectives, largely because of the governor and legislature appropriating substantial resources to the Conservancy, primarily to fund nature-based adaptation. There are four goals in our strategic plan, with measurable objectives under each goal. The fifth goal is qualitative and focuses on our organizational objectives. The first goal is to prioritize equity. There are four objectives under this goal, and the Conservancy has made significant progress on each of them. The strategic plan targets spending 40% of our agency's funding to benefit systemically excluded communities and California Native American tribes. We have exceeded this goal with more than two-thirds of the Conservancy's funding supporting projects that benefit systemically excluded communities to date. Similarly, we have exceeded our target of 60 projects with meaningful community engagement and our target of 40 projects to include workforce development. In terms of our work with California Native American tribes since 2023, the Conservancy has funded 32 projects in collaboration with tribes. This includes funding of $400,900 to YTT Northern Chumash Tribe to initiate a good fire promotion program, including preparation of a cultural burn management plan, training tribal members, purchasing equipment and supplies for cultural burns, and conducting up to a 20-acre cultural burn. Our second goal is Enjoy the Coast. This includes objectives related to public access improvements and Explore the Coast program, Explore the Coast Overnight program, as well as our Coastal Stories programs, all which support coastal experiences to foster joy and belonging for people and communities who face challenges accessing the coast. The strategic plan has 14 objectives under this goal, and we have exceeded targets in seven of those objectives, so half, and are making good progress on the others. Since 2023, 46 Explore the Coast projects have been awarded. Staff estimates that these 46 projects will engage over 14,200 people. Of those people, project partners estimate that the program will engage over 8,400 people through the proposed projects. Of these people, project partners, will serve over 6,700 low-income Californians, 7,000 people of color, 660 youth who are experiencing houselessness or foster care, approximately 3,200 people for whom English is not their first language, and at least 1,600 people with physical, cognitive, and or emotional disabilities. These grants allowed systemically excluded Californians to feel joy in the healing powers of the coast without fear of financial cost, physical barriers, or feelings of not belonging. We are far exceeding targets on recreational facilities planned and built. For example, the Conservancy awarded a $2 million grant to the City of Anaheim for the construction of a 3.3-acre nature park to restore natural habitat and provide recreational opportunities along the Santa Ana River and the City of Anaheim in Orange County. We've made good progress on our Explore the Coast Overnight objectives as well, with all three ETCO objectives increasing by 25 to 50% compared to last year. This year, in Humboldt County, we completed the Matole Beach Campground Expansion Project, doubling the footprint of the campground to serve more visitors. In Santa Cruz, we completed the Santa Cruz Hostel Renovations Project to provide additional accommodations and make improvements to a popular hostel near the Santa Cruz main beach. Our third goal is to protect and restore the coast with seven specific objectives. We have already exceeded our five-year objective for acres of lands conserved, with over 75,000 acres conserved out of our 50,000-acre goal. For example, in Humboldt County, the Conservancy awarded $1.3 million to the City of Fortuna and the Wiat Tribe on two related acquisitions to develop a riverfront park and restore floodplain and riverine habitat. The City of Fortuna will acquire 7 acres of land to be developed into the riverfront park, and the Wiat Tribe will acquire 230 acres of land to restore Cottonwood Gallery Forest, a rare habitat, and enhance in-stream habitat for salmonids. While habitat restoration objectives are on track, there has been slower progress made in 2025 due to a lack of available funding. Staff strategically decided to provide large grants in 2024 to accelerate restoration implementation on a handful of large-scale projects, especially in Southern California, including $30 million to the Los Cerritos Los Cerritos Wetland Restoration Project and $30 million to the Tijuana River Estuary Tidal Restoration Project. These decisions, along with the Prop 4 funds not being available, meant that funds were not available for new authorizations in 2025. Our fourth goal is climate ready. Between July of 2022 and February of 2026, including the projects being considered today, the Conservancy Board will have authorized more than $570 million of general fund and greenhouse gas reduction funds for coastal protection and sea level rise adaptation. That said, most of the general fund and GGRF funds were authorized in 2023 and 2024, so there was limited funding, as I just mentioned, for 2025. Regardless, we have made significant progress on our climate-ready objectives, with five of the seven objectives already exceeding targets. For example, the Conservancy provided an augmentation of $2.7 million for the South Bay Salt Pond Restoration Project for the Mountain View ponds of A1 and A2W. Pond A2W was breached just a few weeks ago, and there will be a celebration tomorrow to celebrate the breach as well as the trail opening. In addition to restoring the 710 acres of that pond to tidal wetland habitat, the project includes creation of habitat transition zones for sea level rise resilience, as well as a construction of a 1.2-mile San Francisco Bay Trail spur with three viewing areas. For wildfire resilience projects implemented, we have more than doubled our target with over 13,500 acres of improved forest health and reduction in the risk of catastrophic fire. For example, the Conservancy authorized an $850,000 grant to the City of Albany to implement forest management activities on 8.5 acres within Albany Hill and El Cerrito Hillside Natural Area. The two cities will partner with Urban Tilth, a Richmond-based nonprofit, to train and employ local youth to conduct forest management. Our fifth and final goal is focused on internal organizational objectives. We continue to make good progress on our six organizational objectives, including providing staff training to expand skills and knowledge related to equity, tribal engagement, and access for people with disabilities. This is not on my script, but we did just partner with BCDC and the Coastal Commission with a NOAA grant to provide training in terms of tribal engagement as well as community engagement over the past year as well. Additionally, with our extensive changes to the Conservancy's recruitment and hiring practices to increase the diversity of our candidate pools, we have increased the diversity of project managers, positions that were historically majority white. Finally, we continue to review and continue to improve our hiring practices, and I look forward to report more progress on this and all of our goals next year. Thank you.
Thank you, Evan. Mm-hmm. Are there any questions or comments?
Yeah, first off, I just wanted to comment and congratulate the Conservancy staff. All I heard, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, is that y'all are ahead on everything. Is that right?
Basically. There's a few that were either on track or a little bit slow. Like, one I'll mention is working lands. We're a little bit behind. I think it's at, like, 55%. And that's because there are very limited funding sources for that type of work, including Prop 4, which doesn't have a working lands section or call out.
Okay. Are you able to use any of the Prop 4 funds on that? Or
yeah, we can use the coastal resilience funds if the working lands project has a coastal resilience component. So that's what we're going to be focusing on to try to achieve that objective.
Okay. Mm-hmm. But other than working lands, are there other categories where we're behind? Or
yeah, but all of the categories where we're behind, it's like 55%, 50%, and we're at 60% of the plan.
Yeah.
So for most of them, we have ideas of how we're going to achieve that. Like our Explore the Coast Overnight, we made a huge jump compared to last year, but we're still falling behind. And we have a number of projects that are coming in the next year that we think will get us up to speed.
That's great.
Yeah.
I've been on this board for a little while, and I've been through several of these plans, and I think this is the first time 3 years in where we've been so high on all the categories. So, again, kudos to staff and leadership for getting there. That's amazing. Thanks.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you, Evan.
Amy.
Oh.
Oh,
Marcus. I can talk really loud.
Oh, here we go. Sharon.
Yeah.
So congratulations to staff and leadership. I've said this before in other meetings, and I will say it as many times as it takes. You know, when we talk about actually implementing equity and actually making all of these very nice sounding words real, that is where the hard part comes. And I am so excited to be able to congratulate and champion and encourage some all of you in doing this, because it's very easy to talk in platitudes and make these very nice sounding statements and plans, et cetera. And the hard, very, very hard part is to actually make it a reality. So congratulations, and please continue to do this. It's thoroughly, thoroughly exciting to see this.
Thank you.
Good.
Great. Thank you so much. And I did just want to follow up, because Evan mentioned the South Bay salt ponds and the restoration at Mountain View. And on the morning of the Super Bowl, the South Bay Salt Pond Project was featured on the national news as the backdrop to the Super Bowl.
And the Bonito Bowl.
The Bonito Bowl and Bad Bunny.
Was Bad Bunny?
Yeah. Bad Bunny. I only watched, that was the only part of the Super Bowl I actually watched, was the halftime show and the story about the South Bay salt ponds. But it was just great coverage of the work that we're doing in the South Bay, viewed by many, many people. And on the topic of videos and outreach, Erica Johnson, a project specialist at the Conservancy, is going to share another one of our Coastal Stories videos. And this is at the request of the board. She shared two at the last board meeting, and we're going to share one at each of the next four board meetings. So I'll turn it over to Erica.
Great. I think you made my piece really short. So yeah, just add it. No, that's perfect. Yeah, the November board meeting, we were transported to Southern California to the city of Maywood for the Sleepy Lagoon Mural Project, and then to Central California, Watsonville Wetlands, for their mural of migrations. And so while I managed the award to Public Broadcasting Station of Southern California for the videos, each project has a project manager, which is one of my colleagues. And so I'm going to introduce Sheree Erickson, who's going to introduce the video that's going to be in the Bay Area.
Hello, all. So I'll keep it brief because the video will speak for the project. So this is the Peoples of the Canal project, which takes place in San Rafael along the canal in the Canal District. And it is going to have 20 interpretive signs along a 2-mile stretch of trail along the canal that's going to take the walker of the trail through a 20,000-year history of the area. So it'll be an ecological history, but also just general history. And just a quick project update. Again, the video will get into most of it. But originally, we did aim to have these signs installed by fall of 2025. However, sign installation has been postponed to incorporate community feedback and ensure that all community voices are accurately represented in the content of the signs. And in particular, the grantee has been working very closely with tribal partners on the project to better support tribal artists and have their work represented in the panels. So in the end, the grantee and the Conservancy have decided that delaying the project but ensuring sensitive stories and histories are accurately portrayed was better than installing signs that did not accurately reflect the history of the various Canal District community members. So we can let the project or the video play and explain the project, but keep that in mind that maybe the dates that you hear are not super accurate.
Welcome to Full Service Retirement Resort Senior Living at the Village at Northridge and the Village at Sherman Oaks. Discover more at retireatthevillages.com.
Won't be long.
My name is Rich Storick. I'm the executive director of the Canal Arts Nonprofit. And the Canal Arts is dedicated to creating public art, mostly in the canal, which is an immigrant community in San Rafael. So the Peoples of the Canal project began with my walking this path to think about why many thousands of years ago, who were the people here? What really happened?
This project is incredible in terms of its scope, in terms of the story it's telling, but also in terms of its physical distance.
This is a 2-mile path stretch of the San Francisco Bay. What we're doing is to tell the story over 2 miles, 20,000 years, up to the present and even up into the future. You'll be going by 20 different exhibits. If you begin at the one end of the path in the past, you'll be looking at a small beach that 20,000 years ago was not there. So as you begin walking north from the past, you'll be going into the Ice Age phase and the megafauna that we know were here. Then as you come on through the thousands of years of Coast Miwok indigenous history, they're telling their story, and you come to more present-day migrants that come into this area from Asia, from South America, Central America, Mexico, and, of course, the history of the Spaniards coming in to build their missions and, in effect, enslave and indenture the local people.
So when I think about public art, we are always looking for opportunities to have those moments where community members can stop and pause and reflect on whatever is in front of them.
I think having the voices of the people who are inhabiting the area now is really important. This was Mexico before it was California, so this isn't it's nothing new. It's just the shifts that have been happening in the last few decades have changed it a certain way.
Have things happening around the country where we are constantly reminded that we don't belong here. And I think that is going to change only when people really feel that they do.
So what I love about this project, there is an aspect that says, yes, we see the indigenous folks and we see who's living here now in the canal. We see you. We appreciate your culture. We understand how important you are to the fabric of San Rafael. And this is literally the personification of the city's values of saying, we need you and we are here to support you.
So we are one of the stakeholders in the project. We are supporting the canal arts and the city of San Rafael and the residents. We provide a space for meetings. We support them with securing funding to this work. But also we are actively being part of that storytelling. And we are the trusted partner for the Latino community. So our participation also allows the Latino community to feel safe to participate as well.
I'm born and raised in San Francisco, and as a result of my public education, unaware of a lot of California history. And that just plunged me into doing a lot of research and a lot of book reading, a lot of talking to people, and learning things that I've never known here. An unknown part of California's history to many, many people is what was done legally to the indigenous people who lived here. There's literally a written law by California's first governor that says, here's the bounty. You are legally permitted to enslave, to kill if necessary, to take the land. It's a hideous, hideous story. However, the Coast Miwok have endured. They're still here.
I think it's very important for all of us to understand where we are now in this moment, in this present time, but also understand what brought us to this point, right? So the historical context is very valuable in that journey, because that will allow us to ground ourselves in this present time and start dreaming about a better future for us.
Toward the present time, we come to the realization that this area is now really under threat. The canal area is low-lying, is flooding right now, and everyone is worried about its future. So the last three chapters here will be dealing with what happens.
This neighborhood in all of the San Francisco Bay will be one of the first neighborhoods to have inundation from sea level rise from the bay because it's low-lying. So having that intersection of climate change in this pathway you're standing and recognizing the impact is there. So how do we show up and how do we talk about that? And again, having it be in an artistic framing, people tend to be less defensive and more curious and more inquisitive, which is what we're going to need to do to address all of these issues.
Well, this project started small, and it's been growing now through the years. So we've been now over 2 years putting all the parts and pieces together, and the cooks in the kitchen here are numerous. They're poets, they're writers, they're historians, archaeologists, they're tribal members, visual artists, and they have really collectively formed this project. By the end of this year, we will have installed these 20 exhibits along the 2 miles, and we'll have a fabulous celebration.
Art is inviting us in, is being inclusive, and that is what this project does.
Well, congratulations. It was beautiful.
Forward to showing you other projects from other regions as the board moves to other regions in California.
Yeah. Great. Yeah, many thanks to the staff at the Conservancy who imagined and then made real the Coastal Stories Grant Program and then worked with PBS SoCal to produce the 6 videos. So we will keep sharing them. And, it's been great to just see the ripple effects of the Coastal Stories Grants Program. And that concludes the EO report.
Well, thank you. A great way to counterbalance some of the awful things that are going on these days. It's really nice to know that we participated in our own way with this. It's great. All right, we now are ready to go on to the project portion of our agenda, and that will start with the Greater Bahia Wetlands acquisition of $2 million for the Marin Audubon Society.
Thank you.
And that will be presented by Erica Johnson.
Yes.
Erica?
Quick question. Do I use the clicker? Okay. Thank you. Good morning, Chair Bosco and members of the board and members of the public. Today, staff recommends the Conservancy authorize disbursement of up to $2 million to Marin Audubon Society to complete the Greater Bahia Wetlands acquisition, which consists of acquiring approximately 323 acres of baylands located along the Petaluma River in Marin County for protection, restoration and enhancement of natural resources and wildlife habitat, protection of cultural resources, and potential public access compatible with those purposes listed above. Oh, there we are. The two parcels encompassing the 323 acres are referred to as the Lavroni property. The Lavroni property is located in unincorporated Marin County along the Petaluma River and next to Marin County's Nosfield Airport. It falls within the Petaluma River and San Pablo Bay flood zone and is located within a large rural area that also includes extensive wetlands and tidal habitats. The property consists of two non-contiguous parcels outlined in yellow on the slide. The parcels are separated by Pinkston Slough. The parcel to the east of Nosfield Airport encompasses approximately 153 acres, and this parcel has levees, culverts, and an off-site pumping station to remove water when flooded. The parcel to the south of Nosfield Airport consists roughly of 170 acres of dike baylands. This southern parcel could expand the Bahia Tidal Marsh, which was a previous acquisition the Conservancy supported in 2002. This potential connectivity is what gives the project its name, the Greater Bahia Wetlands Acquisition. The property has been owned by the Lavroni family and used for cattle grazing and hay production for nearly a century. Rising sea levels have and will continue to increase overtopping of existing agricultural berms during storms and high tides. In addition, the high groundwater table caused by sea level rise will make pumping water off the property more costly and difficult. The neighboring lands of the property are largely in public ownership, including the California Department of Fish and Wildlife's Rush Creek and Bahia Marshes to the south, and the diked seasonal wetlands to the north, which form part of their Petaluma Marsh Wildlife Area Burdell Unit. The acquisition will ensure an uninterrupted corridor between wildlife areas immediately north and south, preserving ecological connectivity across these areas. The acquisition supports regional initiatives such as the Baylands Habitat Goals and the San Francisco Bay Joint Ventures target of restoring 100,000 and 125,000 acres of tidal marsh, respectively. Marin Audubon Society has conducted a property appraisal and has executed a purchase and sale agreement with the Lavroni family with a closing date in June of 2026. The total acquisition cost is $3,460,000. Marin Audubon Society and Marin Baylands Advocates will contribute $1,460,000 to help cover the full cost of the acquisition. Future restoration goals. Following this acquisition, Marin Audubon Society plans to conduct community engagement and restoration planning. The restoration goals include creating critical habitat for endangered species, such as the Ridges rail, black rail, and salt marsh harvest mouse, while also supporting species of concern like the salt marsh yellowthroat and San Pablo song sparrow. Future restoration efforts may also include a setback levee with an ecotone slope, providing wildlife habitat and flood protection for existing infrastructure. It was also found that there may be cultural resources on or very near the property, and so Marin Audubon Society will continue to engage tribes regarding the protection of their cultural resources. Lastly, Marin Audubon Society will plan potential public access compatible with those purposes listed above. Thank you all for your time and consideration of this project. Here with me today online is Barbara Salzman from the Marin Audubon Society to help answer any questions from the board.
Thank you. Are there any questions for Ms. Salzman or? No. Good.
Wait, is this her first time?
Pardon?
Is this her first time?
Then no,
that
I don't have any questions.
Go easy on me.
Well, certainly Marin Audubon Society needs no introduction. They have been partners with us on a number of projects, and they always do a superb job. And Barbara Salzman has been with them for many years. And we also got a call from Eric Lucan, who's, I think, on the Board of Supervisors there, and he's speaks very highly of this project. So having said that, do we have a are there any public comments?
We have one public comment.
All right.
Allison, feel free to speak.
Hi, my name is Allison Pence. I'm on the board of Marin Audubon. I'm a recent board member, and I just wanted to reiterate the supervisor's comment that I've been continually impressed by Audubon's long-standing record of property acquisition and management, and feel confident that Marin Audubon can make this project work and be successful, and we have the track record to make that happen. So I just wanted to thank you all and look forward to continuing on this path.
Well, thank you, Ms. Pence. Right. Do I hear Ms. Gutierrez? Yes. Okay. Marsh moves. Brian, you second.
Second.
We approve this item. All those in favor? Oh, no, we have to have a roll call. Bruce, will you please, right. Paul, will you please call the roll?
Ms. Cavallari?
Aye.
Mr. Cash?
Aye.
Ms. Gutierrez-Groudage?
Aye.
Ms. Urey?
Aye.
Mr. Hallisey?
Aye.
Chair Bosco?
Aye.
Item 5 is approved.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you all for fostering this project. And Jerry Hallisey, welcome to the board. Good to have you with us.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, we'll now go on to item 6, which will be introduced by Sherry Erickson. And that is the Napa River Ecology Center implementation phase. Sherry?
Hello. Good morning, Chair Bosco and members of the Coastal Conservancy Board. My name is Cherie Erickson, and today I am going to share some information on the Napa River Ecology Center implementation phase. Staff recommends that the board authorize a $2,769,000 grant to the American Canyon Community and Parks Foundation to complete the Napa River Ecology Center implementation phase, consisting of retrofitting a defunct corporation yard into an accessible environmental education center that includes educational and interpretive elements, climate resiliency features, and connections to the Bay Trail in American Canyon. So the following map shows the project's location at the intersection of Wetlands Edge and American Canyon Road in the city of American Canyon. The site is adjacent to the Napa River Wetlands and just south of the Wetlands Edge Park. The map also highlights the nearby schools and community centers that the Ecology Center will serve. The photo on the top left of the slide shows the project site as it exists today, and the photo on the bottom right shows a rendering of what the site will look like post-construction. The site has been used as a maintenance yard by the city since the 1960s. However, in 2020, the city moved its operations, and since the site has been sitting mostly unused. The site design shown on the bottom right of the slide was guided by an extensive multi-year community and tribal engagement efforts. In total, over 800 participants provided feedback on site design, and the foundation will continue their community engagement work both throughout and after construction by hosting on-site volunteer programs. Recently, the Napa River wetlands have been the focus of significant restoration efforts, including a tidal reintroduction and floodplain rehabilitation plan, led by the City of American Canyon. In that plan, the city identifies this project as essential to achieving their floodplain goals. This project will reduce localized flooding by restoring natural stormwater flows and improving on-site drainage. And the photo on this slide shows an example of what current flooding conditions look like on-site. The goals of this project are as follows: to renovate the existing structure to support education programming, to construct a new education and interpretive elements, to implement climate resiliency features, which will make the site more resilient to sea level rise, and some of those features include raising the cabinetry, implementing permeable surfaces, climate smart planting, and elevating the utility systems. The project will provide accessible public access to the wetlands and will expand youth workforce readiness programming. The project will significantly improve conservation education and public access to the Napa River wetlands by opening trails with wildlife viewing areas and providing educational programming for nearby schools and community groups. The photo on this slide shows renderings of various design aspects, including outdoor classroom spaces, teaching gardens, and a nature-themed play area. Interpretive elements will include a 3D topographical map and interactive educational signs as well. Another goal of this project is to support and increase public access to the wetlands. This will be achieved by allowing access to a pre-existing 3/4 mile pathway that connects directly to the San Francisco Bay Trail and by hosting volunteer groups like the one shown here. The foundation anticipates hosting approximately 15,000 visitors in their first year of opening. Additionally, on site, there will be wildlife viewing areas, such as the one shown here, that will allow the public to observe the wetlands. And again, all of the features at the Ecology Center will be ADA accessible. And lastly, this project will allow the foundation to expand Teen Wild, their teen workforce development program. Participants in the program, like the ones pictured here, will assist with projects like landscaping and garden installation during construction. And then after construction, they will continue to assist with public conservation education and lead conservation-based projects. Thank you for your time. And with me, I have Janelle Selleck, who is the executive director of the American Canyon Community and Parks Foundation. And we are both here to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you, Sheree. Mm-hmm. Are there any questions?
I just had one quick question on the finances. Good job in getting multiple private donations and other grants. Really appreciate that. We really like seeing more money coming in than just the Coastal Conservancy, so that's great. I noticed there's a federal grant on there. Is that secured given everything that's going on in the federal government right now? Just wanted to make sure.
Yeah, great question. The federal funding is secure. We have 2024 funds of $800,000 that were appropriated to us through community-funded grants. Our local Congressman Thompson's been a big supporter of this project. In 2025, we did have funding that was appropriated but then taken away with the new administration, so that was a blow to us at the time. Now, just recently, since this application was submitted, we did get word that we were awarded $2 million in 2026 funds. That's been approved through the same structure, the community-funded grant process. So we're thrilled with that, and that on top of this potential funding puts us at completely funded. So it's
great.
Exciting.
Looks like a great project.
Thank you.
It looks like an area that has hardly ever been seen by the public.
Yeah, the area right now, the 3-acre footprint is completely closed off from the public, yet there's residences and schools right across the street and within, an eighth of a mile walking distance. So it's surrounded by thousands of residents, thousands of students that walk the paths in front of it every day, but it's completely closed off by this ugly old gate and fencing. So we're improving all of that and opening it up to the public.
Looks like it has lots of different species of plants and wildlife. And
yeah, the Napa River Wetlands is one of the most biodiverse areas, and it's along the Pacific Flyway. So there's special status species out in the wetlands, not on our footprint. So it's a beautiful, it's a really a perfect place for students and community members to come and learn and
sort
engage
of like
in
a
stewardship.
Forgotten area, really.
It's yeah. The Napa River Wetlands in American Canyon, there's a main trailhead that that about 3,000 people a month come to walk and bike. This area is adjacent to it, just slightly south, but closed off to the public. So we'll really provide this nice additional bookends of access to the wetlands.
Wow, that's great.
And parking.
And parking.
I noticed the playground has kind of unique-looking structures on it. Are those really unique? I mean, is some unknown artist, someone that did those, or I haven't seen playgrounds with that kind of structures on them.
Oh, the nature-based play area is very unique. The vendor we're sourced with is SPEC, which is a Bay Area vendor that specializes in nature-based play. So it's safe, it's accessible, but it's encouraged it's designed to encourage risky play and physical activity for kids that traditionally, these days so many of them don't get time outside. So it is a unique play area in its nature-based design. It's the first one in Napa County like that, so we're really excited about it. Wow. It's similar to Tunnel Tops. If anyone has been to the Tunnel Tops Nature Play area, it's the same vendor that's provided their play structure.
Oh, that's great. Well, who would like to move approval?
We have public comment, actually.
We have two public comments.
Well, can't we have that after we move approval?
I'll move approval.
All right, let's have the public comment.
Scott, feel free to speak.
Scott. Hello, can you all hear me? Oh, thank you very much. Hi, I'm Scott Thomason, and I live in American Canyon. I'm a retired educator and currently the treasurer of the Napa Sierra Club Group and a member of the executive committee of the Sierra Club's Redwood Chapter. And this will be our fourth year that the Sierra Club has partnered with the American Canyon Community and Parks Foundation staff to provide sea level rise education programs to Napa County students. The Napa River Ecology Center project will allow expansion of sea level rise education while also increasing the resiliency of the project site to future sea level rise. Now, more than ever, this focus is critical in making people of all ages aware of the importance of the threat of sea level rise in Napa County and throughout the Bay Area. In addition, the Eco Center project provides additional benefits in support of Coastal Conservancy goals, including public access and education and workforce development. So I'm here today on behalf of the Sierra Club to support the Parks Foundation's grant application to the Coastal Conservancy. In closing, I want to thank the Conservancy Board individually and collectively for considering the Parks Foundation's application, and thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Mr. Thomason. All right, are there any other public
comments? We have one more public comment. Leah, feel free to speak.
Hi, my name is Leah Jambastiani. I'm a restoration director at Point Blue Conservation Science, and I work with Point Blue to oversee the Novato Baylands, which includes Bellmer and Keys and Hamilton Wetlands, and run a community engagement and volunteer program through the wetlands. I find it is so important to have a location for the community to engage and connect and learn about the marshes and ecology of the San Francisco Bay. The Napa Ecology Center will serve this need and be able to expand their education and restoration programs along the Napa River wetlands. Point Blue partners with the foundation on a native plant restoration project just adjacent to the future Napa Ecology Center. The project will bring climate resilient planting pallet, permeable surfaces, and rainwater capture. We are so excited to support this project and support the Conservancy's goals, including public access and education. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Jambastiani. Are there any other comments? All right.
Move approval.
Okay, Mr. Cash moves. Ms. Cavallari seconds.
I second.
That we approve item six. Paul, will you call the roll?
Yes. Ms. Cavallari.
Aye.
Mr. Cash?
Aye.
Ms. Gutierrez-Groudon?
Aye.
Ms. Urie?
Aye.
Mr. Hallisey?
Aye.
Chair Bosco?
Aye.
Item six is approved.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Great project. All right, we'll now move on to item seven, which is Mark Cullinans will provide us with information on the Bay Farm Island Near-Term Sea Level Rise Adaptation Project. Great.
Good morning, Chair Bosco and members of the Conservancy Board and public. My name is Mark Cullinans. I'm a project manager in the San Francisco Bay Program. Wait for my presentation here. Where am I pointing here? Here we go. Thank you. Good morning again. Zoom past the title slide here. Today, staff recommends that the Conservancy authorize disbursement of up to $2,640,000 to the City of Alameda to conduct community engagement, to prepare plans, designs, environmental documentation, and permit applications, and to coordinate permitting for the Bay Farm Island Near-Term Sea Level Rise Adaptation Project. We added planning on the end of this project title just to be clear of where we are in the project phase for a multi-year, multi-phase project. This project's goal, This project's goal is to protect portions of Bay Farm Island from flooding associated with sea level rise through the year 2060, including development of design plans for a raised levee, nature-based shoreline protection, and an updated pump station along Bay Farm Island's northern shoreline, part of which is shown here. The project also includes interim drainage improvements and higher grades, elevation of higher grades along Island Drive, which is located at the center of the island, which I'll show in this next photo here. The project location is Bay Farm Island, actually a peninsula, which is located in the city of Alameda, located in central San Francisco Bay. Bay Farm Island, as many locations in San Francisco Bay region, is susceptible to sea level rise flooding as well as stormwater flooding. And this is a clear example of that situation, as you can see here in this image. Sorry, it's a little faded here. What you can see in this image are land uses, which include medium-density residential neighborhoods, Oakland International Airport on the left of this image, as well as a landfill, a golf course, and commercial zones comprised mostly of corporate campuses located on the southern shoreline. Bay Farm Island is already mapped in the FEMA floodplain and susceptible to increased flood risk as sea level rises, as I mentioned. The focus areas for the near-term adaptation planning project are mostly found along the northern shoreline, shown in the foreground of this image, including Veterans Court, a lagoon outfall that drains a majority of the residential areas at the center of Bay Farm Island, and shoreline areas extending nearly to Seaview Park, shown in the image on the right. Much of Bay Farm Island is low-lying and susceptible to flooding today. As shown in the image on the right, which is the FEMA flood zone map, Zone A in this map is the 100-year floodplain limits, and they're shown mapped in blue. The focus of this project are the areas highlighted in the boxes outlined in white dashed lines. The City of Alameda leads the Oakland-Alameda Adaptation Committee, or OAK, which has been working over several years with many partners, including City of Oakland, Port of Oakland, Caltrans, and community members and organizations to adapt to future conditions and address the risk of flooding and future sea level rise at Bay Farm Island and surrounding communities. While enduring solutions for addressing long-term sea level rise are being worked out over the long term, the partners have embarked on this near-term adaptation project, which proposes to remove the lagoon area of Bay Farm Island from the FEMA 100-year floodplain, bolster the northern shoreline habitat with nature-based solutions, and enhance public recreation, including San Francisco Bay Trail. The project includes extensive community and stakeholder engagement, which will build on existing outreach efforts and include one round of outreach, as well as ongoing community engagement throughout the two-year project duration. The focus of near-term adaptation is to address several key vulnerabilities. Current flooding, which we have already seen during king tide events, which is shown in the kind of hazy image at the top there. As we know, today's king tides are tomorrow's normal sea levels. The project also plans for 2 feet of sea level rise anticipated to occur by year 2060 and overtopping at Veterans Court and Lagoon Outfall, as well as along the northern shoreline, some damage of which you can see here. This damage is currently being addressed through current permitting efforts, which will move along in tandem with this planning project. Shown here are some representative site photos of the northern shoreline planning area. You can see Veterans Court in the bottom right, just about to be overtopped on that seawall. That happens on a regular basis. You see fringing marsh and the seawall, which is in need of infrastructure repairs that is part of this planning project as well. Also shown are the pump outfall that will be improved and portions of the shoreline where levee and nature-based solution shoreline stabilization features would be planned for. So to date, the city has completed 30% design and conducted a thorough community engagement process in conjunction with earlier planning. City Council endorsed this design concept in January of 2025. This project continues planning from 30% to 60% complete design, as well as CEQA and NEPA documentation and coordination permitting, and they will also conduct additional community engagement. So with that, I will just note, along with the coastal protection benefits, the project includes many project benefits, including open space and recreation improvements, and they will be adding many gathering spaces, signage, and education, and working with the community to identify those opportunities. There are many natural features proposed as well, and so some innovative design concepts included in the project that will be considered. Over the long term, as well as this near-term adaptation project. The project has significant support from community and local leaders, including, I will say, State Senator Jesse Aragon, California Assembly Member Mia Bonta, and representatives from East Bay Regional Park District, Caltrans, Port of Oakland, and San Francisco Bay Trail. On the Zoom today, we have City of Alameda staff present. If there's any questions or any requests, thank you for your time.
Are there any questions, Brian?
Yeah. I notice you have neighbors who are probably also very interested in what's going to happen with sea level rise over the next 10, 15, 20 years. And I don't know the topography of the area, so I don't know if they don't do anything to address this, if that's going to affect what's going on. So has there been coordination with, like, the airport and all the commercial interests in the area to make sure that, okay, if we're doing something, we're not going to be affected by someone on the other side?
Absolutely. Great question. The acronym I referenced, OAK, the Oakland Alameda Adaptation Committee, has been in existence for several years now and conducted many community engagement activities, as well as with partners as Caltrans, Oakland International Airport. This project tears off of 30% design that was completed with FEMA community grant funding, and that project included a lot of engagement with both the community through, like, workshops and public workshops with the homeowners. Many homeowners associations exist on the island, as well as these more institutional partners, you know, and there's road planning elsewhere as part of the project. So the project actually is a subpart of a larger long-term planning effort that will ultimately bring other improvements forward to address flooding and sea level rise concerns through 2100, not just through 2060. Right. So this is the interim phase, or the near-term adaptation phase of that project, really to move us forward and keep the momentum going for what we know is immediate flood concerns.
So there are plans in place or ideas in place to stay ahead of sea level rise over time on.
Absolutely. Okay. And if I may introduce Danielle Mueller, who I believe is on Zoom and available for any questions. And Danielle is the Sustainability and Resilience Manager for City of Alameda, has been engaged with this process for a long time, including a regional shoreline adaptation plan that comprehensively looks at issues over the long term. So if I may.
Thanks.
Good morning. Thanks for being here and for considering this grant application. As was referenced, City of Alameda has been in deep coordination with our community partners and our agency stakeholders, particularly with Caltrans and the Port of Oakland and the City of Oakland and East Bay Regional Parks around this area. The solution that we ultimately need requires input and engagement from all of those partners. And in 2023, we collectively submitted an application to the FEMA BRIC grant program, which would have included solutions in both Oakland and Alameda at the port and along Doolittle Drive, as well as what we're proposing here that has been completed to 30% design. That application was in FEMA review when the BRIC grant was canceled with this new federal administration. And so our approach in coordination with those partners is that we are moving forward with our individual components of that project in coordination. And part of the reason that we are looking to include the Island Drive components in this near-term solution is that we need to recognize that it is going to be more difficult for us to move all of those project components forward in tandem, and we are looking to help remove Bay Farm Island residents from the floodplain as part of the outcome of this project. We can't do that without also protecting the waters that come over from the Oakland Airport and Doolittle Drive. So that is the solution to that. We were hoping for a more holistic solution with the BRIC grant, which would have been a $55 million project and even much higher than that. But we are confident that we can move forward with this approach, and we'll be continuing to coordinate with those agency partners as we go.
Thank you.
Any other questions? All right. Mars, would you like to move approval?
I'd like to move for approval.
Second.
All right. Good. Been moved and approved that we... And moved and seconded that we approve item 7. Paul, will you call the roll?
Yes. Ms. Cavalieri?
Aye.
Mr. Cash?
Aye.
Ms. Gutierrez-Grodin?
Aye.
Ms. Yeary?
Aye.
Mr. Hallisey?
Aye.
Chair Bosco?
Aye.
Item 7 is approved.
Okay. Thank you, Mark. Okay, we'll go on now to item 8, which Laura Cherundenko will describe for us the San Francisco Bay Shoreline Multi-Benefit Flood Risk Management Project. Laura?
Good morning, Chair Bosco and members of the board. Today, I am requesting authorization for funding to support two innovative studies that aim to help address the problem of insufficient funding for sea level rise within San Francisco Bay shoreline communities. And I'll wait for the slides to pop up.
Well, what's your estimate on?
We have another like 12, 13 projects. Sorry. So I would estimate.
It's 5 minutes each, 11. That's an hour. It's 10 minutes each, that's 2 hours.
Okay.
Sorry.
Good job.
It's my job.
The numbers guy.
So I would say, like.
They should sentence people to this. No. Well, how would we even order lunch?
We could order it from like ladle and leaf and ladle. They have salads, and we could take. Anyway, something to think about.
Well, now that you've given us something to think about it. If you hadn't said it, anything.
I know.
Great. All right. Well, continuing on.
Better hurry, Laura.
Okay. I'll speak fast. San Francisco Bay has already experienced 8 inches of sea level rise over the last century. This amount of sea level rise, coupled with high tides and storm events, is already causing flooding along parts of our shoreline. This image was taken a little over a month ago, and it shows when there was a large storm and high tides that caused extensive flooding along Highway 101 in Marin.
God, it's hard to believe. Look at that.
Next slide, please. This map's a little hard to see, but it shows that by 2050, with an additional 10 inches of sea level rise, many shoreline areas are vulnerable to some type of coastal flood hazard, which is shown in pink and blue. A report produced by state and regional agencies estimated that to protect shoreline communities from the effects of sea level rise and storm surge by 2050 will cost approximately $110 billion. The report further estimated that there's only $5 billion in current funding programs to support the necessary adaptation work. Next slide. The two studies being recommended today are intended to help close this funding gap. The studies include data analysis, outreach, and financial modeling. Next slide. For the first study, the Conservancy, Army Corps of Engineers, and the Bay Conservation Development Commission will use existing data sets to select 2 to 6 areas of the shoreline where there's coastal flood risk, vulnerable communities, and potential for nature-based solutions to flood risk. Within these focus areas, the project partners will identify opportunities to align local adaptation efforts with federal investment opportunities, and they will conduct outreach to build local capacity for federal and state funding partnerships. The Conservancy would enter into a federal cost-share agreement with the Corps and provide a $150,000 match as part of implementing this work. Next slide. The second study will be implemented by the Bay Area Council Foundation, who will evaluate how redevelopment of waterfront sites can generate new funding streams for adaptation projects. The council will quantify redevelopment potential in multiple Bay Area subregions, modeling the financial value that could be captured, and will assess the benefits of tying redevelopment to funding flood risk management projects. The council will engage Greenbelt Alliance, a nonprofit partner, to ensure that balanced perspectives on redevelopment and climate resilience planning are incorporated into the study. Next slide. The council will also implement an education campaign about a general investigation study that could be conducted by the Army Corps of Engineers to evaluate impacts and solutions to coastal flooding in the nine-county Bay Area. Through passage of the Water Resources Development Act of 2024, the Corps was authorized to implement the GIS study, and work on the study will only begin if there are federal appropriations. Lastly, the council will create and implement a polling plan that will gauge public opinion about shoreline adaptation needs and potential support of a regional tax measure for adaptation that could get placed on a future ballot. Next slide. So it's critical that the region look at increasing the amount of funding available to address the increasing threats of coastal flooding in our Bay shoreline communities. I thank you for your consideration of these two recommended studies that can help close the funding gap. I have today Adrian Covert from the Bay Area Council here. I think Juliet Hayes from the Army Corps and potentially Jessica Fain from BCDC are all here to help answer questions.
Are there any questions? Adrian, looks like you are facing an uninquisitive group.
Sometimes that's all right.
yeah, right now is a good time for. All right, if there's no, are there any public comments?
We have no public comment.
All right, who would like to move approval of this?
I'll move to approve.
All right, thank you.
Second.
Been moved and seconded that we approve item 8. Paul, will you call the roll?
Yes. Ms. Cavalieri.
Aye.
Mr. Cash.
Aye.
Ms. Gutierrez-Groudon.
Aye.
Ms. Urey.
Aye.
Mr. Halasy.
Jerry, are you out there?
Yeah. Mr. Halasy. Oh, he's distracted. Yeah. Chair Bosco.
Aye.
Item 8 is approved.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We're excited to get to work.
All right. Good. All right, let's go on to item 9 that Vanessa Axon will. Vanessa, is this your first time?
No.
No, all right. Oh, that's good.
Good morning.
That is the core placement of dredge sediment from federal dredging projects. That doesn't sound too exciting.
It's awesome.
Some fun work.
Let's see how you make that exciting, all right?
It will be. Yeah.
That's how we did Hamilton.
Well, that's true. That is how we did Hamilton. Yeah. Brian made a good point. One of our most exciting projects.
For once.
Yeah.
All right. Good morning, Chairman Bosco, members of the Conservancy Board, and public. Today, staff recommends that the Conservancy authorize disbursement of up to $13,900,000, which includes $12 million from a grant to the Conservancy from the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency to the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. And that will be for the incremental costs of placing dredged sediment at wetland restoration sites in Alameda, Marin, and Solano counties. Staff further recommends that the Conservancy enter into a memorandum of agreement with the Corps to be the non-federal sponsor for the Corps' placement of the dredged sediment at the wetland restoration sites, as well as adopt findings under the California Environmental Quality Act. The Corps dredges about 2 to 2.5 million cubic yards of sediment each year to maintain federal navigation channels, which are shown in red in this map. The sediment dredged by the Corps must be placed at permitted placement sites, and that includes a deep ocean disposal site, in-bay disposal sites, or at beneficial use sites, and that includes permitted wetland restoration sites, and that is circled in orange. We have on the top left is Cullinan Ranch, and on the right is Montezuma. The Corps is required to select a disposal option that is the least costly, which is usually in-bay or ocean disposal, but disposing the sediment in the deep ocean or in-bay waters, waste sediment that could instead be placed at wetland restoration sites where it helps accelerate sediment buildup and the establishment of tidal marsh habitat. This proposed project would provide funding to the Corps to cover the additional or incremental cost of bringing dredged sediment to wetland restoration sites where it can be beneficially used for tidal marsh restoration. So the two wetland restoration sites currently permitted to receive the dredged sediment are Cullinan Ranch along the shoreline of San Pablo Bay and Montezuma. It's along the eastern edge of Sisoon Marsh. Both of these sites are subsided baylands that were historically tidal marsh. So Cullinan Ranch has received approximately 4.2 million cubic yards of dredged sediment to date and can accept an additional 300,000 cubic yards. So this photo here for Cullinan Ranch was taken in August of 2025. And here we see the dredged sediment that has already been placed, and now it's beginning to dry and harden. On the right is Montezuma Wetlands Restoration Site, where 17 million cubic yards of dredged sediment are necessary to restore approximately 1,880 acres of tidal and seasonal wetlands. Approximately 9 million cubic yards of dredged sediment has been placed to date at Montezuma. And just going back to this fun map here, this is just highlighting the area that's circled in green, which are two wetland restoration sites that may become permitted in the future to receive dredged sediment, so which is Belmarine Keys at the top and Eden Landing on the lower part of the map. Belmarine Keys Unit 5 is an expansion of the Hamilton Wetland Restoration Project that's located on the western shore of San Pablo Bay. We have Eden Landing. It's located along the East Bay shoreline within Union City in Alameda County. And Eden Landing is part of the larger South Bay Salt Ponds Restoration Project and is being evaluated as a potential site for placement of dredged sediment. So an environmental assessment and impact report was completed, providing a programmatic bay-wide evaluation of potential environmental impacts that's associated with dredging, transporting, and placing sediment at existing authorized placement sites that includes Cullinan and Montezuma. And this slide shows the 9 resource areas that were evaluated. It was identified that potentially significant impacts would be in the areas of cultural and tribal resources, but by implementing mitigation measures, the impacts would be eliminated or significantly lessened. And thank you for your consideration. Julie Beagle, U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, Environmental Services Branch Chief, and Arye Janoff, Senior Project Planner, are online with us today to assist with any questions. Great fun, right? It was fun.
Very good job, Vanessa. Now, 12 million of this comes from the EPA, right?
Yes.
And we know that's secure, or have we already got it, or what?
We have it. It's awarded, yes.
And then we add 1.9 million.
1.9 million.
That. That's our money,
that's
right?
That's from the Prop 4 funds.
Okay. And as I understand it, to prevent the Corps from dumping this material, like right in the bay, this gives them the ability to make wetlands out of it, and that's what our money is used for.
Yeah, it'll be covering that, the additional cost to be able to bring it to the wetland site.
Okay. Any questions? No. Sounds like a good project.
Yeah.
All right, are there any public comments?
There are no public comments.
All right. Who would like to move?
Motion to approve.
Oh, good. You're coming. You're really taking over now. Good. It's your first meeting, too, right? Good, good. And then would you like to second?
Yes, I'll second.
All right. It's been moved and second that we approve item 9. Paul, will you please call the roll?
Yes. Ms. Cavalieri?
Aye.
Mr. Cash?
Aye.
Ms. Gutierrez-Groudinch?
Aye.
Ms. Yeary?
Aye.
Mr. Hallisey? Chair Bosco?
Aye.
Item 9 is approved.
Thank you.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Can I just make one request? If, just so that we don't have to ask, if you have federal funds and you come up for a project, just let us know they're secure. Yeah. Because we're all a little worried about that right now.
Right.
So, thank you.
Well, in this case, I think we already have those funds, right? That's good. All right, item 10 has been removed. So now we go on to item 11, which is 5 community-based dune, wetland, and stream restoration projects in Ventura, Los Angeles, and San Diego counties. And Thomas Morales will present that. Thomas? Now, this is your first time, isn't it?
This is.
Oh, no, really? It is?
Oh, yeah.
Now, everybody come up with some hard questions.
All right. Well, hello, Chair Bosco and members of the Conservancy Board. My name is Thomas Morales, and staff recommends authorization to disperse up to $385,442 to 5 nonprofit organizations for 5 community-based dune, wetland, and stream restoration projects on approximately 41 acres in Ventura, Los Angeles, and San Diego counties as part of the 2025 to 2026 Community Wetland Restoration Grant Program, or CWRGP. And the CWRGP is a program of the Southern California Wetlands Recovery Project. The WRP consists of 18 state and federal agencies coordinating with local partners carrying out wetland restoration projects throughout the region. And the purposes of the CWRGP are to further wetland recovery goals in Southern California, build local capacity to plan and implement wetland restoration projects, promote community involvement in wetland restoration activities, and foster education about wetland ecosystems. And the CWRGP seeks to engage and benefit historically marginalized communities, including lower-income people, people with disabilities, Black, Indigenous, people of color, and immigrant communities. And since 2001, the CWRGP has funded over 180 projects, distributing $5 million for community-based project implementation. And this year's projects are shown with yellow dots. And the proposals were reviewed by a committee that includes staff from the Conservancy, California Department of Fish and Wildlife, the Ocean Protection Council, and the Wildlife Conservation Board. And let's talk about the 5 projects briefly. First up, we have the Surf Rider Foundation, who is leading the Wainimi Beach Park community dune restoration. And the project site, Wainimi Beach Park, is degraded due to invasive plant species paired with trampling of vegetation due to unmanaged public access. And the project will involve 14 volunteer stewardship events to bring community together to restore 2.5 acres of coastal dune habitat by removing invasive plants, planting native species, installing sand fencing to build dune topography, and installing post and rope fencing to create designated access paths. And the second project is South Bay Parkland Conservancy's Willow Wonders, Cultivating Community Stewardship at Gardena Wetlands. The Gardena Willow Wetlands Preserve is a 13.6-acre preserve included in Los Angeles County, including rare natural bottom vernal wetlands. The wetlands are dominated by invasive species and polluted by storm drain runoff. And the project will restore 1 acre of vernal wetlands and adjacent upland habitat, involving community stewardship days, providing educational workshops. And the project will also create an internship training program for planning and implementing future community wetland restoration projects. And the third project is the Ocean Connector San Diego Bay Habitat Restoration and Education Program. Ocean Connectors, working with Ocean Foundation as a fiscal sponsor, will partner with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and the Port of San Diego to restore 7.5 acres of upland, wetland, and river corridor habitat within South San Diego Bay. In over 2 years, Ocean Connectors will run a total of 20 restoration events and 40 kayak cleanups. And the restoration activities will include kayaking through marsh habitats to collect litter from intertidal zones that are inaccessible by foot, pulling invasive plants, and planting native species. And the remaining two projects are both located in the impaired Choice Creek watershed, which is the most urban and heavily impacted watershed in San Diego County, suffering from severe pollution and erosion due to stormwater flows. And the fourth project is the 32nd Street Canyon Task Force, swapping fire fuel for coastal canyon habitat. And the project will restore 4 acres of riparian habitat in the 32nd Street Canyon, with work primarily done by volunteers. And the project will engage teachers and students in wetland education and hands-on restoration activities. And the project also includes supporting 30 community college interns mapping the distribution of native and non-native species. And last but not least, we have San Diego Canyonlands Project, Choice Creek Watershed Connection, Swan Canyon and Creek. The project is led by 3 nonprofit partners, San Diego Canyonlands, San Diego Coastkeeper, and Renaissance, a Kumeyaay-led grassroots organization. And the partners will restore over 25 acres by removing invasive plant species and planting of over 400 native plants. And the project plans to incorporate Kumeyaay traditional ecological knowledge, and the project will include a 12-part educational stewardship series that will engage approximately 240 local and Kumeyaay community volunteers. And thank you for your consideration of funding these projects. We're joined online by representatives from Surfrider, South Bay Parkland Conservancy, Ocean Connectors, San Diego Canyonlands, and the 32nd Street Canyon Task Force. We're happy to answer any questions you may have.
Are there any questions? No? Well, good job, Thomas.
All right. Thank you.
Are there any public comments?
No public comment.
All right. We'll go ahead then. Mars, do you want to move?
Yes, move to approve.
And Brian?
Yes, second.
It's been moved and seconded that we approve item 11. All those in... Oh, no. Paul, will you please call the roll?
Yes. Ms. Cavalieri?
Aye.
Mr. Cash?
Aye.
Ms. Gutierrez-Groudage?
Aye.
Ms. Urey?
Aye.
Mr. Hollisey?
Jerry,
are you still there?
I think he's there, but may not hear us.
I've lost the sound.
Oh, so are you voting aye?
Pardon me?
I don't think he can hear us.
Are you able to hear us?
I'm here, but I've lost the sound.
Yeah.
Just say aye.
Yeah.
Aye.
All right, I'll say.
All right, you have a deal.
Okay, all right, good.
Chair Bosco.
Aye.
Item 11 is approved.
Good job, Tom.
Thank you.
All right, we'll go on now to item 12. And Sam Janikas will give us that one, Pierpoint Beach Management Plan. $1,242,182. It's a lot.
It is a lot. And I've been a little bit stressed out about, like, saying that number without getting my tongue tied. Good morning, Chair Bosco, members of the board. My name is Sam Janikas, and today I will be presenting the Pierpont Beach Management Plan project. Staff recommends the Conservancy authorize up to $1,242,182 to the City of Ventura to engage the community and to develop the Pierpont Beach Management Plan in Ventura County. The plan will consist of site assessment and engineering studies, design and conceptual planning for shoreline features, sand management activities, an implementation plan for a preferred suite of projects, preparation of an environmental compliance document, and preparation of permit applications. I'm not sure where I'm supposed to point this. Nothing seems to be happening. I'm just going to continue on, and hopefully this will...
There you go.
Wow, okay, we're going to go through a lot right now.
Like digging a grave or something.
Yeah, I'm not sure what. All right. The proposed site is a mile-long, highly frequented sandy beach at the southern end.
Karen Chattister, or two other.
Southern end of San Buenaventura State Beach, known locally as Pierpont Beach. As with most California beaches, the beach widens during the summer and fall and narrows during the winter and spring. The houses of Pierpont Beach community are built right up to the beach, as you can see here, with 28 perpendicular streets terminating at beach access points. The city also retains a 40-foot-wide street right-of-way known as Shore Drive. I'm barely legible as a red line on this graphic adjacent the houses. The remainder of the beach is part of State Park San Buenaventura State Beach. Pierpont Beach provides important habitat for several special status species, including the western snowy plover. Currently, Pierpont Beach and the adjacent community experience coastal erosion, sand loss, storm and wave inundation, as well as the buildup of nuisance sand that impacts public access to the beach, as well as public and private property adjacent to the beach, as seen here. The erosion and flooding impacts will increase as sea level rise. It's a curious situation, a beach that experiences impacts from both too much sand and too little sand. Storm events of January and December of 2023 provided a glimpse into this future when severe erosion from high surf coupled with king tides caused the loss of a significant portion of beach sand and undermined public access stairways in multiple locations along the beach. Additionally, a rogue wave overtopped the beach and injured 8 people that had come out to see the large surf. This is a screenshot from that occurrence. The city is obligated to maintain the Shore Drive right-of-way to prevent buildup of sand mounds against 15 beachfront properties and in the public access stairwells for the beach. The proposed project consists of preparing a Pierpont Beach management plan to inform the design and construction of living shoreline features at Pierpont Beach that will increase resilience to sea level rise and coastal hazards. These features would simultaneously provide additional habitat and increased flood protection at Pierpont Beach as the city manages the nuisance sand. The project will include 4 phases. The first, a feasibility, site assessment, and technical study phase, followed by conceptual planning for living shoreline components, sand management approaches, followed by development of a draft implementation, monitoring, and maintenance plan, and then finally, environmental review and the initiation of permitting process. The project includes extensive public outreach and engagement, building upon previous engagement with established stakeholders, including California Native American tribes and community-based organizations addressing local environmental and social justice issues. As an additional land manager, State Parks will collaborate in all phases of the project. The engagement process will also focus on disadvantaged communities within a half mile of the project site. The city and myself have also engaged with the Coastal Commission staff in Ventura for their coordination on the project as well. The project is an opportunity to provide multiple benefits to the community of Pierpont Beach by increasing coastal resilience through the creation and enhancement of coastal dune habitat. These benefits will be enjoyed by regional beachgoers and will provide habitat for multiple special status species. That concludes my presentation. I have Joe Yonner from the City of Ventura on the line, and we're available to answer any questions. Thank you.
Any questions? As I understand it, this roadway that was hard to see, the city is obligated to maintain that?
Yeah, and it's a paper road. It's a road that doesn't actually exist. It's covered with sand. It's part of the beach, but it's an access way. So it exists in planning documents, but the city is obligated to remove sand from that area and adjacent 15 individual private properties as part of a settlement agreement.
And is the city trying to do that, or is it?
Yeah, they currently do that twice annually, and this is this project is looking to better manage sand on the beach and provide additional habitat, and hopefully lessen the city's need to move as much sand over time.
But so the ultimate goal that we would have is to create dunes on the beach that prevent the sand from moving as much as it does?
Yeah, that's the likely living shoreline application is development of additional dune habitat. There is some dune habitat there, but that's what we're planning to do.
Has that been done elsewhere? I mean, for that big of a beach? It's a mile long, right?
It's a mile long. It has been done elsewhere. There are active pilot projects in Ventura County, I think at different stages. We've done living shoreline approaches in San Diego County. We have a planned one at the in Imperial Beach near the T1 estuary. And then I'm sure Megan can talk about a few other projects in the South Coast region, but yes, that's something that we try to do.
But here there's absolutely no barrier at all between the sand and the houses, right?
There are private property walls, and then the access stairways, there's a cinder block wall in that area, but these houses are not really built like beachfront houses. They look more like a house you'd see in any neighborhood. They're not like a beachfront house on the East Coast where things are elevated. They're just houses built at grade and with wind and beach processes and geologic processes, sand moves around.
It seems like what we would be financing is just a drop in the bucket compared to what this kind of a project would cost.
Well, right now we're funding planning associated with this, and I think implementation of it would be a future phase of the project. The city right now spends a certain amount of money. I'm not sure if Joe is on the line and we can ask him about how much the city has to commit to this management process twice per year, but yeah, it's something that we're hoping that we can lessen the cost of management, keep the sand on the beach where it is useful, and not have it encroaching into access ways and people's property.
But it's pretty predictable that if we do the planning, the next step is someone's going to come to us for the next phase of this.
It seems how it usually works, yes.
And it seems to me like it's a big project, a really big project.
I'm not sure how much we're not there yet, but it really is moving sand into like beneficial areas on the beach and hoping to keep it in areas and not migrating overall, like all around the beach. So I think how much that would cost would be speculative at this point.
Is the city putting aside any money for this? Is it planning to spend money on this? Or?
I don't have an answer for that. Perhaps Joe, if he's on the line, has an answer for that.
Hi. Yes, thank you. This is Joe Yonner from the city of Ventura. I'm the environmental street maintenance manager. Yeah, so currently the city spends between $200,000 to $400,000 of maintaining Pierpont Beach, essentially as sand builds up against the 15 properties involved in the settlement agreement and the lane ends. There's about 36 lane ends about 20 lane ends that terminate at the beach, and we remove sand from there. In terms of contributing to this project, we obviously want to get this, the planning and understanding of what the project will entail. Most likely, it will be similar to what was done in our managed retreat projects, and not necessarily constructing full dunes, but creating sort of small dunes and then seeding them with native vegetation. And then over time and natural processes, those dunes will grow and expand in a natural way, but also allowing us to maintain that beach. So yes, there will be some moving sand around to spread it out. But in terms of construction and that type of thing, it's primarily creating these sort of seeded dunes, and then allowing natural processes to take effect.
And you've done this somewhere else, the city has?
Yes, we have. We actually had two projects. Surfers Point is an area located just north of Pierpont Beach. And it was an area that had a bike path and a parking lot that was severely impacted by wave events and was eroding. The bike path was collapsing into the ocean. And so we were able to obtain funding from the Coastal Conservancy to implement these managed retreat projects where the bike path and the parking lots were moved back, and dune, basically sand and cobble, were placed on the beach and allow the natural dune systems to establish. So we're currently in the process of implementing that second phase, but the first phase has been done for a long time, and it's been very successful.
And Brian just told me that he has a better memory than I do, that the Conservancy did help fund those projects, so at least we have a record of something being successful.
Yeah, they were great
projects. Well, good. All right, do you want to move that we approve?
Sorry, I just wanted to say I was really glad to hear about the coordination with Coastal Commission. It sounds like this project could perhaps have some complexities with permitting, and so just really encourage that we continue that to make sure that moves smoothly through the process.
Yeah, that was a subject of the conversation with the Conservancy, with the Commission, yeah.
The Commission could easily use up the $1.2 million. Should we write you out a check?
No permit fee for city permits.
Move approval.
All right. First, let me ask, are there any public comments?
There are no public comments.
All right. Mr. Cash moves. Ms. Gutierrez Groudens. Okay. We have a motion and second that we approve item 12. Paul, will you please call the roll?
Ms. Cavalieri?
Aye.
Mr. Cash?
Aye.
Ms. Gutierrez Groudens?
Aye.
Ms. Urey?
Aye.
Mr. Hallisey?
Aye.
Chair Bosco?
Aye.
Item 12 is approved.
Okay, thank you, Sam.
Thank you.
All right, we're going on now to the Founders Grove Renewal and Restoration Project in.
When we go up north, are we going to go see this project?
Pardon?
The next time we go up north, are we going to go see this project?
Yeah, I don't think. Do we go up north in the fall?
Yes, in September.
Okay, Joel is saying we can stop.
Let's do.
Yeah, yeah. Founders Grove is
move
beautiful.
Approval.
Hannah Varty will present this. Apparently, you don't have to do too much talking.
Excellent news. And I just wanted to say this is my first time presenting to the Conservancy Board.
I was going to ask, yeah.
I figured you might.
I take back my motion.
Oh, so you were preemptively saying this.
Exactly. So I'm ready for whatever hazing or questions, questions you might have.
Aren't you something?
And I'm not brand new to the coastal.
You're disarming us right away.
It's true. I've been around at the Coastal Conservancy for over 2 years, so I've learned some of your tricks. And but I have been largely on the Great Redwood Trail Master Plan, so haven't been bringing quite as many projects to the board. Most of them so far have gone under consent. So good morning.
Well, this isn't under consent.
No, it is not. Good morning, Chair Bosco and members of the board. My name is Hannah Barty. Today, I'm recommending the Conservancy authorize disbursement of up to $1,239,300 to save the Redwoods League to implement the Founders Grove Renewal and Restoration Project. And I did say it was my first time, so give me a moment while I get this to work.
Well, you came off a lot more confident than
this. There we are. The project site is located within Founders Grove and Humboldt Redwood State Park, and hopefully, oh, now it has advanced too many times. We'll let it pause and adjust. Looks like it's stable now for the PowerPoint presentation. As mentioned, the project site is located within Founders Grove and Humboldt Redwood State Park, hopefully a stopover point for the board tour in September. And it's a highly visited park in the North Coast Redwoods District for state parks. Founders Grove is just north of the town of Wyatt and directly adjacent to Highway 101. Lots of folks stop there to use the restroom, to see the scenic redwoods. It's right off of the Avenue of Giants Scenic Drive, right next to the Eel River and the planned Great Redwood Trail route. Founders Grove is one of the most visited sites in this larger Humboldt Redwood State Park, yet despite its popularity, its infrastructure is old and in poor condition. The parking lot is often overflowing, the comfort station is crumbling, as you can see in these pictures here, and the interpretive exhibits and wayfinding signage are outdated. The current parking lot is about 0.75 acres and is definitely undersized for the highly frequented area, having capacity for only 18 vehicles and no bus or RV parking. In addition, this is located immediately within an old growth coast redwood grove, negatively impacting the tree's root health zone. State Parks and Save the Redwoods League recently began construction on phase one of their Founders Grove Comfort Station relocation and replacement project. This first phase will address some of the current challenges that I mentioned at Founders Grove by building a large parking lot, shown in the large rectangle in this map, along with the comfort station and picnic grove, so that they're all located in a site away from the old growth redwood grove. The new parking area will be nearly a mile from the popular Founders Tree and existing Founders Grove Nature Loop, which is shown in the green loop on this map. And phase one planning and construction is being funded by State Parks, which will provide a total of $3.7 million, and Save the Redwoods League, which will provide $2.5 million. Phase two activities, which will be after the phase one that I just described, comprise a project that I'm recommending for funding today. Now, the Founders Grove Renewal and Restoration Project addresses three additional challenges to Founders Grove. As I mentioned, that old parking lot will come out, and the new site there, the old growth redwood grove, will be in need of restoration. The project will remove the existing outdated day-use facilities and signage. It will also remove the asphalt of the old parking lot and revegetate the majority of the area, except for ADA parking spots that will continue to provide accessibility to the closest point on the Founders Grove Nature Loop. No additional redwood trees would be planted, as restoration would focus on revegetation with understory plantings to return this grove to a healthier state. The project will also construct an accessible one-mile-long trail that will allow visitors to safely access the grove and the existing loop trail from the new parking lot that I described earlier and the new comfort station. This trail construction would include installation of a pedestrian bridge to cross an existing drainage, and ferns and shrubs that are removed during the trail construction would be relocated to the Redwood Grove restoration area and that old parking lot. As you can see here in these pictures, the trail route will wind through both old growth and second growth forests, showcasing the development of forests over the time. This new trail will also become a connector to the planned Great Redwood Trail segment in the Founders Grove area. And finally, the project will install some newly branded wayfinding signage, as well as the new interpretive signage developed under a previously awarded Coastal Conservancy Coastal Stories grant. And the new interpretive signage content will retell the story of the project area more accurately, not hiding the challenges of the past, and more inclusively prioritizing the history and connection of local California Native American tribal communities with the land. The interpretive exhibits and wayfinding signage will be installed in appropriate locations to protect the old growth Redwood Grove, help people access the new trail, and highlight the updated story of Founders Grove. This picture shows the new location for that new parking lot. So you can see it's not in an old growth Redwood Grove like the current parking lot, and it's in an already disturbed area. And so in summary, this project will be multi-benefit and support other state investments in the project area. The Founders Grove Renewal and Restoration Project will enhance public recreation opportunities by complementing the Phase 1 improvements already planned and moving into implementation, and enhance habitat through the restoration of the old growth Coast Redwood Grove. I thank you. That concludes my presentation. We do have two staff of Save the Redwood League here with us today, and Ben Friedman, Director of Grant Government Affairs and Public Funding, has just a very short comment that he'd like to deliver before we're available for questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Hannah. Just wanted to express our gratitude to Hannah and Joel on the staff for helping us sort of steward this project and express our support. You know, this project to us sort of represents moving from the past into the future of Founders Grove itself, as well as this incredible, exciting new connection to the Great Redwood Trail, which we feel is this great new chapter in sort of coastal recreation and access. So we're here to answer any questions. My colleague Matt and I, thank you for your consideration. And we'd love to have you out on your way north in the fall. Cheers.
All right, I'm ready for those hard-pressing questions.
I have an easy one.
Great.
So 18 spots in the old parking lot. How many in the new one?
I believe over 60. I'm getting a confirmation. Yeah, nod.
Awesome. That is great.
And that will also include some large spots for RVs or folks that are carrying trailers, as well as a loading and offloading place for people that are getting onto buses.
Years ago, I had the opportunity, along with other people, to visit Queen Elizabeth. And the few words she said to me is she wanted to see the redwood trees. And I think that speaks for a lot of people throughout the United States. I don't think there could be a better way for us to welcome people to California than to do the type of projects that you're recommending here. It's many times been to Founders Grove, and it's really spectacular. Are there any comments from the public?
No public comment.
All right. Brian, I think you'd like to move this one.
I do.
Right? And
yes.
Mars, you want a second?
Yes.
Okay. Will you call the roll, Paul? Yes.
Ms. Cavalieri?
Aye.
Mr. Cash?
Aye.
Ms. Gutierrez-Groudage?
Aye.
Ms. Urey?
Aye.
Mr. Hallisey?
Aye.
Chair Bosco?
Aye.
Item 13 is approved.
All right. Thank you very much, Hannah. You did end up doing a pretty good job. And next we have Michael Bowen. That's a nice tie, Michael.
I think it's circa 2005 from a prior board meeting, probably a Salvation Army in Fort Bragg.
We don't see many bow ties since Sam's left, so it's good to see them back.
Is this Advancer working now? Okay.
Well, you tie them yourself, too. That's not a clip-on, is it?
Yep, correct.
It's not.
Good morning, Chair Bosco, members of the board. Just like to acknowledge that in solidarity with this project, the Department of General Services has turned the entire building into a walk-in refrigerator. And although this isn't my first board presentation, it is my first presentation under Chapter 7 of our enabling legislation, which makes me very excited the more I think about it. So I'd like to seek your authorization to disperse up to $1.5 million to Sonoma County Regional Parks to replace the aging ice house at Spud Point Marina, Bodega Bay, in western Sonoma County. And I'm going to, in true commercial fishing fashion, slip out of the berth backwards and acknowledge our friends and colleagues from Sonoma Parks who have come here to attend the meeting and share any thoughts or answer any questions that you may have. But we really appreciate them making the trip down and all the hard work to bring this project to you. So this isn't a very good image, and it's oops, sorry. And you can't really read it, but what it does highlight is if you've ever been to Bodega Bay, and it is a very special place, as long as you don't think about Alfred Hitchcock and the birds, it's largely, at this point, from a recreational standpoint, managed by Sonoma Parks and managed very well. And there's just a lot of opportunities there, both for recreational use, two campgrounds, and several marinas, a sport fishing center. But this is not an accident. Like a lot of places on our Pacific coast, this is a harbor that was deeply reliant on the commercial fishing industry and the income that that generated. And I don't know if you share the same nostalgia I do for the days when commercial fishing boats brought in loads and loads of fresh king salmon for our enjoyment, but it's been 3 years, and I've really missed that. And it's been hard on those hardworking families. And these graphs, again, not particularly legible, but I think you can see the general trend and trajectory. It's down. And it really reflects two things that the commercial fishing fleet has experienced, volatility and decline. And that has resulted in a lot of economic challenges along the Pacific coast. But it's also made it hard for the folks trying to manage working waterfronts. And I think the County of Sonoma's credit and to Park's credit, they've really worked on pivoting to try to capitalize on the increasing popularity of recreational use of these facilities, recreational fishing and crabbing and so forth, while also working on governance, consolidation, and management of the existing facilities that they have there and the infrastructure. And they've been very successful at this. And this kind of reflects that trajectory. You can see more and more people bringing their smaller boats out, enjoying these facilities, and enjoying being on the water. But this is kind of what they have to deal with to make that adjustment. More or less, from an equipment and infrastructure standpoint, it's a patient on life support. Dry rot, rusting out equipment, and a pump that is, I find, frightening.
I'll say.
Just to put it in perspective, it depends on a refrigerant that was banned under the Clean Air Act for import and manufacture in 2020. And it's subject to increasingly frequent breakdowns. So imagine yourself as either a sport or commercial fisherman, and you're out to sea and you have half a load of crab or rockfish or salmon, and you get word that this ice house is broken. And you have two choices at this point. You can go north to Fort Bragg, the Noyo Harbor, which is about 25 hours to the north at 4 knots, or you can go south to San Francisco, which is about 25 hours at 4 to 5 knots. So it's not a very happy situation for folks out there trying to make a living or recreate. Doesn't have to be this way. This is Noyo Harbor, that 25 hours to the north. And they have just recently revamped their entire ice house and associated facility through a variety of grants. And in typical Mendocino fashion, painted a beautiful mural on the side of the building. And it's really revitalizing that waterfront and really helping the community utilize that resource and enjoy it and share it with the public. And this may be, we don't have any commercial fishermen here today. I think, Chairman Bosco, you've probably attended a few meetings in your day with unhappy commercial fishermen. So our goal here is happy commercial fishermen and sport fishermen, and we're looking for community resilience for those hardworking families and economic vitality for West Sonoma County and the county, a reliable supply of fresh, sustainable, locally harvested seafood. And with that, I'll close out and offer County Parks up for any questions.
I had the privilege of driving up here in at the largesse of the Sonoma County Parks folks, Elizabeth Tyree, David Robinson, and Bert Whitaker were kind enough to carpool with me, or I did with them. And one of the things I learned is that crabs, if you just catch them and leave them by themselves in a big box, will fight with each other and, you know, literally destroy each other. But if you put them on ice, they will calm down and be relatively kind and friendly toward each other. A nice metaphor for maybe what could happen otherwise. But and so I think if nothing else, this will help preserve the natural bounty of the area and the people that live there and make a living, you know, will benefit from the tons of crab that they do take in being in good shape. Also, I wanted to say that Supervisor Hopkins was instrumental in seeking our approval of this, and she's taken a very big interest in this particular area and helping these folks. I think it's a really very good project, and everything we can do to help. They're very hardworking people, and they're not making a lot of money, but they're surviving. And I think what we can do to help them, we should do. That's my opinion. Is there any, Morris, do you want to move approval? Okay. Brian?
Sure. I just wanted to make one comment. I appreciate the matching funding on this. That's almost 50%. That's great.
Thank you. If I could, I just wanted to note, too, that fairly recently we learned that I think Congressman Huffman had secured an appropriation that very unexpectedly but provided a significant part of that match. And, of course, the county has contributed quite a bit, too. So thank you for acknowledging that.
Are there any public comments?
No public comments.
Okay. All right, Paul, will you call the roll?
Yes. Ms. Cavalieri?
Aye.
Mr. Cash?
Aye.
Ms. Gutierrez-Groudinch?
Aye.
Ms. Urey?
Aye.
Mr. Hallisey?
Aye.
Chair Bosco?
Aye.
Item 14 is approved.
Great. Thank you. As penance, the parks people had to sit through our entire meeting for this appropriation. All right, let's go on to item, what would it be, item 15. Amanda Townsell.
Yes.
Hello.
Hi, Amanda. This is Jacoby Creek Restoration Planning Project.
That is correct.
Doing a lot of planning today.
Planning's important for the future.
Yeah. Optimistic.
All right. Well, good afternoon, Chair Bosco and the board. My name is Amanda Townsell, and as you said, I am presenting the Jacoby Creek Restoration Planning Project. Staff recommends a grant of $1,066,000 to the Humboldt County Resource Conservation District to conduct studies, develop three conceptual designs, collaborate with the community and California Native American tribes to select one of those designs for advancement to a 30% design level, and to prepare environmental compliance documents to enhance creek habitat and reduce flood risk in the Jacoby Creek watershed in Humboldt County. This is going to go through a bunch of them. I think I'm one too many. Nope. Okay. All right. The Humboldt Bay region is the ancestral and current home of the Wiat people. Prior to colonization, the Wiat lived in permanent villages around Wege, or what we know as Humboldt Bay, and its waterways, including Shuruk Deme, or Jacoby Creek. The creek flows from the coastal foothills through the community of Bayside and the southern city limits of Arcata before entering the northeast portion of the bay. The watershed contains important habitat for anadromous fishes, including coho, steelhead, and coastal cutthroat trout. More than 170 years of colonial settlement and development has altered the physical and ecological processes of the watershed, degrading aquatic habitats and increasing flooding impacts. The Conservancy has supported resource protection and enhancement projects in the Jacoby Creek watershed since 2004. The most recent project, which you can see the cover of here, produced a feasibility study that included initial studies and modeling to support the future development of 10% design plans. This project will continue the planning process and will ultimately produce 30% design plans for landscape scale restoration and enhancement in Jacoby Creek. This will be done in partnership with local tribes, private landowners, agricultural land managers, the City of Arcata, the County of Humboldt, and the Jacoby Creek Land Trust, and a technical advisory committee that was formed during the previous project. The project area covers the lower 2 miles of Jacoby Creek and its floodplain, spanning approximately 900 acres. The area includes the Jacoby Creek Gannon Slough Wildlife Area, more than 40 private residences, agricultural operations, lands owned by the City of Arcata, and land and conservation easements held by the Jacoby Creek Land Trust. This large amount of open space presents strong opportunities for enhancing the stream corridor, floodplain flow network, and coastal wetlands. Rapid development and colonization followed the arrival of settlers in early 1850. The same year saw the establishment of Eureka and Uniontown, now called Arcata, and the first logging operations. Development in the watershed has included logging mills, railroads, quarries, and the diking and draining of tidal marshes for agricultural and residences. Here you can see is an 1854 map. Overlaid on top in red is the project area. Old Arcata Road has been highlighted in orange and Jacoby Creek in blue. The straight portion on the project area is what runs along what is today's Highway 101. Prior to 1850, what we call Old Arcata Road was a Wiat trail that had connected villages. The trail quickly became a wagon route and was further developed into a highway in 1861. So historical diking of tidal marshes and high sediment loads from the upper watershed have led to sediment aggregation in the Jacoby Creek Channel. This has led to the raising of the stream bed, reducing channel capacity, and causing the channel to be perched higher than the adjacent floodplain. This causes overbank flooding and safety hazards across residential, agricultural, conservation areas, and public roads.
The perch channel prevents water from re-entering, and it also prevents fish that have been swept out of the channel and is causing fish strandings. This map is from the feasibility study mentioned earlier. Jacoby Creek is in blue, and Old Arcata Road in orange. The arrows you see represent flooding, with green being frequent flooding and red being large flooding. But what does this actually look like? The top left is an adult female coho that was stranded and unable to return to the creek to spawn. The top middle image is an aerial view with Jacoby Creek in blue and Old Arcata Road in orange. The red arrows are pointing from two residences along Jacoby Creek. The lower image is from Dina and Mark Moore. This is their property during the extreme rain events at the end of December. The image on the far right is from a neighbor, Dennis Rail, and again shows the extreme flooding. So the project will begin with baseline resource study assessments. These will be used to create three conceptual design alternatives up to a 10% design level. The project includes ongoing engagement with community landowners, tribes, and stakeholders throughout the project term. A stakeholder meeting will be held to select one design plan to advance to the 30% design level. Construction cost estimates will also be included. The project will develop plans to restore self-sustaining tidal and fluvial processes within the Jacoby Creek watershed that promote recovery of habitat for wildlife while reducing flood impacts to public roads, residences, and agricultural operations. Thank you very much. I have Doreen Hansen, a watershed program manager with the Humboldt County Resource Conservation District, on Zoom and is available to answer any questions.
Thank you. Are there any questions? We've given money to Jacoby Creek before, I think.
Yep.
Yes.
What was it for?
Let me tell you.
There's some restoration projects upstream, I believe.
Restoration project.
There was a restoration a while back. South Jacoby Creek restoration. Sorry. you got it. Go ahead.
I remember Joel presenting them.
Yes, yeah. I think it was one of those.
Yes. So in the staff recommendation, December 2004, we contributed funds towards acquiring the Arcata Baylands property, which is within the proposed project area. 2006, the Conservancy passed through a National Coastal Wetland Conservation funding from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service for further acquisition, restoration, and enhancement. Including 30 acres of restoration in the Jacoby Creek estuary. In 2016, the Conservancy contributed funds for the South Jacoby Creek Restoration Project, and then the most recent was the feasibility study.
All right. Are there any? Well, Elizabeth, would you like to move approval?
Happy to motion for approval. Yes.
Madeline, do you want to second it?
I'll second.
All right. Are there any public comments?
No public comment.
All right. Would you call the roll, please, Paul?
Ms. Cavalieri?
Aye.
Mr. Cash?
Aye.
Ms. Gutierrez-Groudens?
Aye.
Ms. Urie?
Aye.
Mr. Hallisey?
Aye.
Chair Bosco?
Aye.
Item 15 is approved.
All right. Thank you, Amanda.
Thank you.
Okay. Now we will go on to the Osprey Hill Ranch Acquisition Project, and that is going to be presented by Louisa Morris. Hi, Louisa.
Good morning, Chair Bosco and members of the Coastal Conservancy Board.
Morning.
My PowerPoint presentation is on its way. My name is Louisa Morris, and I will present the Osprey Hill Ranch acquisition project for your consideration. With trepidation, I will advance the slide. Oh, it worked. Okay, good. This 365-acre acquisition, which is proposed by the Sonoma Land Trust, is located 4 miles north of Bodega Bay on the stunning Sonoma coast. For your consideration and authorization, we are asking for disbursement of up to $3.05 million to the Sonoma Land Trust for the Osprey Hill Ranch acquisition project. The purpose of this acquisition is for public access, including the California Coastal Trail, as well as natural resources, habitat, open space, agriculture, and cultural resources protection, restoration, and management. Acquiring this ranch will add a missing piece of the puzzle to the quilt of lands that are managed for public benefit on this spectacular part of the Northern California coast. Currently, this ranch is in private ownership, and it's used for cattle grazing. Once acquired, the property will host approximately 2 miles of new California Coastal Trail and connect to adjacent parklands that are managed by state and regional park agencies. This acquisition will also protect a wide variety of habitats, including coastal prairie, riparian corridors and streams, and wetlands within the Coast Range Marin Coast Wildlife Corridor. As you can see from this map, sorry about the way it's blown out and a little bit hard to read, but, oh good, I'm glad to hear that. The arrow points to the Osprey Hill Ranch, and you can see that this acquisition fulfills a missing piece of the Sonoma Coast public lands conservation puzzle. The Coastal Conservancy has helped to fund, conserve, and support many great projects in this vicinity, including Jenner Headlands, Monterio Redwoods, Willow Creek, Wright Hill Ranch, Red Hill, Pole Mountain, Carrington Ranch, amazing, Sonoma Coast State Park Projects, Estero Ranch, and Estero Americano Preserve, as well as others. SLT is already collaborating with many Osprey Hill Ranch project partners, including tribes, the Kashaya Band of Pomo and the Federated Indians of Graton Rancheria. And the Osprey Hill Ranch acquisition will be funded by several project partners, including the Sonoma County Ag and Open Space District, the Gordon and Betty Moore Foundation, Local Foundation, and others. So looking forward beyond this acquisition, as you can see from the many letters of support that were provided by the grantee, SLT is already collaborating with state and regional parks and two local tribes to provide public trails and resource protection aligned with long-term stewardship. The Sonoma Land Trust team, including John McCall, the acquisition director, and Brenda Schick, their conservation consultant, and I are available to answer any questions you may have. Thank you.
Amazingly beautiful, huh?
That's amazing. I don't have a question. I just have a kudos. Love all the matches. It's amazing. More than half the acquisition is through matches. So,
yeah.
That's the Sonoma Land Trust for you.
Yeah.
They're really good at that.
We were talking about it this morning. It seems like this whole area has so many partners, that all of which are really professional in terms of raising money, managing, trustworthy. Never any problems with them, you know. I mean, and having accomplished so much over a period of time, it's just incredible. Amazing. Are there any other comments? Or? Elizabeth, you look like you're ready to make a motion.
Motion to approve.
And Madeline, you
I'll
want
second.
To say it? First, we should ask for public comment.
No public comment.
All right. It's been moved and seconded that we approve item, what was it?
16.
Item 16. Paul, will you call the roll, please?
Yes. Ms. Cavalieri?
Aye.
Mr. Cash?
Aye.
Ms. Gutierrez-Groudich?
Aye.
Ms. Urey?
Aye.
Mr. Hallisey?
Aye.
Chair Bosco?
Aye.
Item 16 is approved.
Okay, thank you,
thank
Louisa.
Thank you so much.
Good job. All right, we'll go on now to item 17, which is the Santa Barbara Ocean Collective Shoreside Infrastructure Planning Project. And Trish Chapman will present that for us.
Yes. Wait a moment to see if the presentation comes. Okay, great. Well, I think we've moved on to afternoon. So good afternoon, Chairman Bosco and board members. I'll be presenting the Santa Barbara Ocean Collective Shoreside Infrastructure Project on behalf of Irvin Tang. Staff recommends the Conservancy authorize a $507,500 grant to the commercial fishermen of Santa Barbara for the Ocean Collective Shoreside Infrastructure Planning Project, which will prepare 60% design plans to develop a 16,000 square foot unused lot on the Santa Barbara City College campus into a community boatyard. The project also includes engaging tribes and other stakeholders, conducting technical studies, preparing permit applications, and undertaking CEQA review. This project has been a long time in the making and is the result of a collaboration between the commercial fishermen of Santa Barbara, the City of Santa Barbara, and Santa Barbara Community College, who together formed the Santa Barbara Ocean Collective to address the needs related to Santa Barbara's blue economy. The collective's goals include developing shoreside infrastructure, specialized workforce training, and employer engagement to achieve environmental and economic resilience for Santa Barbara's ocean economy. The Port of Santa Barbara is one of the top seafood-producing waterfronts in California and has close to 160 resident boats that use the harbor. In addition to fishing, the harbor supports commercial diving, small-scale aquaculture, coastal management and restoration, clean energy, and maritime supply chain workers. But the cost of entry, lack of access to storage, and few training opportunities have contributed to an aging workforce and limited industry participation by women, people of color, and lower-income residents. The lack of boat storage facilities has been exacerbated in recent years because sea level rise and increased coastal flooding threaten the commercial fishermen's existing 9,000 square foot storage yard. But this isn't a project that's just about boat storage. That's just the part that we would help fund. The larger Ocean Collective is undertaking involves developing a training program run by the community college that will support new and existing participants in sustainable fisheries and other blue economy industries, fostering community and climate resilience, economic stability, and food security. As part of this, the site would also be used by the college's marine diving tech program and other blue economy education and workforce programs. In addition, the space will be set aside for tribal uses, such as storing traditional Tamal boats and modern vessels. The proposed project area is a vacant lot on the Santa Barbara City College campus, less than half a mile from the Santa Barbara waterfront. The site would be redeveloped into a multi-use boatyard with additional parking bays for trailered boats, storage lockers, and workshop space for tools, storage, and gear repair. The project will continue to engage local tribes and other stakeholders through in-person and online workshops, social media, and other mediums, and will undertake necessary studies, prepare 60% design plans, permit applications, and CEQA review. So, at first glance, you might not think boat storage is a very exciting project, but this project has so much going for it. It's building sea level rise resilience for the city's fishing industry, advancing workforce development that will benefit systemically excluded communities, supporting the growth of a sustainable blue economy in Santa Barbara, and increasing access to the coast for local tribes. I'm actually kind of glad that Irvin wasn't able to make it today because I'm a big fan of this project, and I was like, no, I want to be the one to present it. So that concludes my presentation, and Kim Selko of the Commercial Fishermen of Santa Barbara is on the Zoom, and we're both available to answer any questions.
Are there any questions? No?
No.
Are there any public comments?
No public comment.
Well, Trish, you've done a good job. No questions or comments? Or are there any motions?
Motion.
Okay.
And second.
Moved and seconded that we approve item 18. Paul, will you call the roll?
17.
Oh, 17. Okay. Well, and Trish, you're doing the next one.
I'm also doing the next one.
Okay.
Ms. Cavalieri?
Aye.
Mr. Cash?
Aye.
Ms. Gutierrez-Groudage?
Aye.
Ms. Urey?
Aye.
Mr. Hallisey?
Aye.
Chair Bosco?
Aye.
Item 17 is approved.
All right. Great. Well, Trish Chapman will now do the Lower Sycamore Creek Flood Mitigation and Restoration Planning Project.
And I'm doing this one on behalf of Rachel Couch. So today I'm recommending that the Conservancy authorize disbursement of up to $2,015,000 to the City of Santa Barbara to undertake the Lower Sycamore Creek Flood Mitigation and Restoration Planning Project. The project site is located in the Lower East Side neighborhood of downtown Santa Barbara and is a quarter-mile section of Lower Sycamore Creek located between Highway 101 and the ocean. The project site and an area immediately upstream have been subject to a significant number of damaging floods. Since 1862, 14 separate floods have caused extensive damage along Lower Sycamore Creek. Many of the most damaging storm events were preceded by wildfires that burned the watershed and included substantial debris flows and deposition. Over 50% of Sycamore Creek's watershed is within a high fire hazard area, making the watershed very vulnerable to fire and then posing a high risk of property damage and loss of life when fires are followed by a significant storm event. The city's Lower East Side, located just north of Highway 101, has been impacted repeatedly and significantly by these floods. And this densely packed residential area is also identified in the city's sea level rise adaptation plan as particularly vulnerable to the impacts of sea level rise, given its classification as low-income, disadvantaged, low-income proficiency, and a high percentage of minority residents. Lower Sycamore Creek has insufficient capacity for large flows. The current capacity is less than a 10-year storm event, and the city recently conducted modeling that shows that rainfall intensity in storms is increasing due to rising atmospheric temperatures. It's projected that what was once the 100-year rain event will now be seen seven times more likely to be seen, and that the 10-year event will occur twice as often. Additionally, sea level rise will exacerbate flood risks along Lower Sycamore Creek due to the tidal influence in the lower third of the creek. The city's climate adaptation plan identified widening and restoring the lower reach of Sycamore Creek, including at four bridge crossings, as a near-term adaptation priority. Restoring the Lower Creek Channel will result in numerous benefits, including reduction in flood frequency and the extent and severity, increased resilience to the impacts of sea level rise and more intense rainfall patterns caused by climate change, reduced need for habitat destroying bank hardening to protect existing development, improved habitat for the endangered tidewater goby and southern steelhead, as well as other estuarine, riverine, and riparian species, and improved creek corridor aesthetics and public enjoyment in this highly visible urban coastal location. And specifically, our funding would allow the city to complete technical studies, engage local tribes to receive input on the restoration approach, conduct community outreach in both English and Spanish, evaluate design alternatives, prepare 30% designs for the overall project and 60% designs specifically for the channel restoration elements, and prepare environmental compliance documents and permit applications. The City of Santa Barbara will contribute $700,000 in funds plus $465,000 of in-kind services. In conclusion, I also want to recognize that the City of Santa Barbara is really a leader in the Central Coast on climate adaptation. The city completed its climate sea level rise adaptation plan in 2021 and is now working on this and other near-term priorities identified in the plan. This is the type of proactive action that we'd like to see happening throughout the coast. That concludes my presentation, and Aaron Markey of the City's Creeks Division is available on the Zoom as well as myself to answer any questions.
Okay, are there any questions, comments? Trish, how long is the linear measurement of this project?
The section of creek that is involved, that it involves, I believe, is about a quarter of a mile. Maybe Aaron can specify that. Is Aaron on?
Sorry.
Oh,
good morning. Can you hear me?
Yep.
I guess it's afternoon, actually. Yeah, it's just over a quarter of a mile.
But it will benefit an area that's actually upstream of the reach that's being addressed, because that's where the worst of the flooding impacts are.
Yeah, I can give a little more background on that. The Caltrans actually modified the culvert under the freeway, and there's two bays that are currently closed off until downstream capacity improvements can be made. And so those constrictions are really what's causing the upstream flooding, is these downstream constrictions we need to address.
Seems like something that should have been done a long time ago. It's, you know, considering how developed the whole area is down there, it's pretty rudimentary.
Well, we can be slow to address things.
All right. Are there any public comments?
The whole world, yeah.
There are no public comments.
Is there a motion?
Move approval.
All right. Mr. Cash moves. Ms. Gutierrez Groden seconds. Paul, will you call the roll?
Ms. Cavalieri?
Aye.
Mr. Cash?
Aye.
Ms. Gutierrez Groden?
Aye.
Ms. Urey?
Aye.
Mr. Hollacy? Chair Bosco?
Aye.
Item 18 is approved.
All right. Thank you, Trish. Okay, we'll now go on to item 19, which is the San Gregorio Ranch. And that will be presented by Aaron Gravely.
Yes. All right. Great. Good afternoon, Chair Bosco and members of the board. My name is Erin Gravely, and I will be presenting the San Gregorio Ranch Acquisition Project. Staff recommends the Conservancy authorize a $2 million grant to the Peninsula Open Space Trust, or POST, to acquire the 196-acre San Gregorio Ranch to protect, restore, and enhance natural resources and wildlife habitat, including wildlife connectivity, and for sustainable agriculture and public access in San Gregorio, San Mateo County. I'm not sure if it's it or me. Oh, nope. All right. Great. The San Gregorio Ranch is a stunning property located just north of San Gregorio State Beach on the San Mateo coast. The property is currently owned by the Walter W. Bridge Trust and has been in the Bridge family for several generations. Historically, the property's main uses have been for cattle ranching and privately managed public access to the 1.5 miles of pristine beach that sits immediately below the property. The public has enjoyed access to the beach since the 1960s. It was one of California's oldest and best-known clothing optional beaches and is acknowledged to be an important part of Bay Area LGBTQ+ history. Walter Bridge donated a conservation easement over the property to POST in 1996. However, the existing conservation easement allows for increased development on the property. If the property were sold to a private owner and developed to the fullest extent allowed, it would negatively impact established habitat for important wildlife species, including listed anadromous fish that rely on San Gregorio Creek. It would also compromise the access to the beach that the public has enjoyed for decades. Acquisition of this property by Post will therefore provide significantly greater protection than the existing conservation easement. Post will serve as an interim steward of San Gregorio Ranch, but plans to eventually transfer the property to state parks at no cost. The ranch's location makes it a natural addition to state parks as it lies just north of San Gregorio State Beach. Additionally, the acquisition includes a small parcel east of Highway 84 that has a residence on it, which could serve as ranger housing if and when the property transfers to state parks. During their interim ownership period, Post will implement access improvements, such as improving the road into the property from Highway 84 and conducting environmental cleanup. Post will work with state parks to develop and execute a stewardship lease, which will allow state parks to provide continued public access during Post's interim period of ownership. Long term, the property provides exciting opportunities for increased public access. Post has identified an alignment for the California Coastal Trail through San Gregorio Ranch, as the ranch is a crucial missing link in the coastal trail. Post will also explore the possibility of rustic camping at the property, as the demand for lower-cost coastal accommodations in San Mateo County far outpaces the supply. This concludes my presentation. Joanna Devers and Brianna Whitney from Post are on the line, and we are available to answer any questions. Thank you.
Are there any questions?
I just had one comment. I'm a broken record, but I appreciate the fact that we're only providing one-fifth of the funding for this project. So, well done. Thanks.
Beautiful project. All right. Who would like to move approval? Okay. Marsh moves. And
second?
Brian, you want a second? Are there public comments?
No public comments.
All right, will you please call the roll, Paul?
Yes. Ms. Cavalieri?
Aye.
Mr. Cash?
Aye.
Ms. Gutierrez-Groudage?
Aye.
Ms. Urey?
Aye.
Mr. Hollacy?
Mr. Aye.
Yeah, there we go. Thank you, Chair Bosco.
Aye.
This item is approved.
All right, good.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. All right, we now have wildfire resilience, item 20.
Did I get it?
Pardon?
He's ordering food, I think.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'll have a... I like the chicken enchilada.
That sounds good.
All right, sorry. We're on item 20, which is the Ukiah West Hills Project, and that will be presented by Christine Aralia.
Can I ask one quick question to Amy before we do this? All the acquisitions, those are being reported up for 30 by 30, right?
Yes.
Okay. That's all I need to know.
Now, Christine, you've done this before, haven't you?
I have done this before, but I can't say that I've done this before for you.
Well, who did you do it before for?
For the Tahoe Conservancy.
Oh, well, that's not the same. How would I have seen you at the Tahoe Conservancy? No?
I might have been there.
You might have been there.
I recognize.
So your experience then? No?
I don't want to hazard to say anything at this point in time. I think I'm going to err on the fit.
All right.
Well, we'll proceed. So...
We'll count you as a veteran.
Thank you.
All right.
Maybe my hazing will be more gentle then. So I am presenting for Lily Allen. I'm presenting the Ukiah West Hills Wildfire Resilience Project. Good afternoon, Chairman Bosco and members of the board and the public. Staff recommends the Conservancy authorize the disbursement of up to $1.5 million to the Mendocino County Resource Conservation District to implement the Ukiah West Hills project, which consists of reducing fuels on 270 to 370 acres in the Ukiah Western Hills in Mendocino County. And wish me luck. I'll just jump around here for a second. Okay. So the project will take place on 760 acres of land owned by the city of Ukiah, located directly west of the city of Ukiah in the Western Hills Watershed Protection Area. The project area is mapped by CAL FIRE as a very high fire hazard severity zone. So is you... too heavy a thumb there. Okay. The project area is covered in heavy, continuous brush and small trees that create high wildfire risk to the city of Ukiah. Steep slopes, dense fuels, and limited safe access routes mean that a fire starting in these hills could move quickly towards neighborhoods and infrastructure. Fuel reduction will reduce the risk of ignition in the project area and increase wildfire resilience. The city acquired the project area in April 2025 and is now constructing a trail there, which you can see at, I'll go back, my slides are mixed up there, in the red and pink hatching on this map. Work in the pink hatched area on the right side of the map, closest to the city, is in the wildland-urban interface and will be funded by an additional $400,000 from the Conservancy's block grant to the Humboldt County Resource Conservation District. The $1.5 million authorization currently before you today and currently proposed would fund fuels reduction work in the red and black hatched areas in the defense zone. So this slide shows a dense thicket of French broom along a trail, creating hazardous conditions ripe for wildfire. The project will thin vegetation while retaining large, healthy trees. The city and the Ukiah Valley Fire Authority will maintain the shaded fuel breaks and trail corridors after the project ends. To aid in project maintenance and overall forest health, the grant would fund the purchase of a mini excavator with a masticator head. And that concludes my presentation. Doug Turk, the Forest Program Director, and Adam Coleman, Forestry Project Manager with the Mendocino County Resource Conservation District, are both on Zoom. And either Doug, Adam, or myself would be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Are there any questions? No. Are there any public comments?
No public comments.
Elizabeth, are you ready to move approval of this?
Motion to approve.
Do you want to second it?
I second.
All right. Good job, Christine. All right, will you call the roll, Paul?
Yes. Ms. Cavallari?
Aye.
Mr. Cash?
Aye.
Ms. Gutierrez-Groudage?
Aye.
Ms. Urey?
Aye.
Mr. Hollisey?
Oh, he's eating.
Yeah. Chair Bosco?
Aye.
Item 20 is approved.
Thank you. I think you did the time limit award for today.
Yeah.
That's no small accomplishment. All right, we're actually getting toward the end of our agenda here, everyone. So, yeah. All right, we're now on item 21, and Joel Gerwine will produce that for us.
All right. Good afternoon, Chair Bosco, members of the board. I'm excited to present to you two new wildfire resilience projects for authorization under the climate bond, and I'm presenting these for Lily Allen, who is under the weather today. Staff recommends the Conservancy authorize the disbursement of up to $2 million to one tribe and one nonprofit organization to carry out implementation projects that will improve forest health and wildfire resiliency in the vicinity of Gaski in Del Norte County, and in the vicinity of Soames Bar in Humboldt County. And I'll just say these two projects, I was really struck by the amount of collaboration and partnership between tribes, nonprofits, agencies, really everyone coming together to try to bring their forests back to a healthy state that will be safe for the community. All right. Okay, the first project I'd like to present is the cooperative stewardship of Musyi Senet and Cedar Rustic, led by the Talawa Dene Nation. Located in Del Norte County, the full project area encompasses 1,505 acres of culturally and ecologically significant land in the wildland urban interface near the town of Gaski in Talawa Dene ancestral territory on the Smith River National Recreation Area, as shown on this map. Beautiful area. The project will combine wildfire mitigation and ecological restoration. This $1.5 million project consists of the strategic fuel treatment of 250 to 350 acres in close partnership with the U.S. Forest Service. The project will use a combination of cultural burning, manual and mechanical methods to thin dense vegetation, remove non-native invasive plants, and reduce hazardous trees and ladder fuels. This project will also create 20 to 30 jobs for the Talawa Dene Nation. Here you can see the two locations to be treated by the project. The western site of Musyi Senet is a village site located around the modern town of Gaski, and Cedar Rustic is about 10 miles to the east of the first site and is an important tan oak grove. Musyi Senet is traditionally known for its acorns and grassy woodlands, but it's become increasingly encroached by dug fir that increases wildfire risk and degrades oak woodland and grassland habitat. Fuels reduction, invasives removal, and cultural burning will reduce the risk of catastrophic wildfire around Gaski while protecting and restoring an important cultural landscape and habitat. The top photo on this slide shows invasive and flammable Himalaya blackberries in the foreground, the oak woodland in the middle ground, and the dense conifer forest on the surrounding slope in the background. The middle photo shows manual weed treatment in the oak woodland, and the bottom photo shows prescribed burning in that oak woodland. This is a photo of the second site, Cedar Rustic. You can see the sizable tan oaks, and you can also see the density of brush and other fuels in this stand. This site also supports Port Orford cedar. Thinning and fuels reduction, followed by prescribed burning, will help restore this stand to a productive acorn grove and high-quality wildlife habitat. Thinning will also reduce the risk of sudden oak death infecting the stand that's recently been found in the area. Cedar Rustic highlights the importance of coordination and co-management between the tribe and the Forest Service. When I visited the site a few weeks ago, I was just really impressed with the way the Forest Service and the tribe has been working together for over a decade. They presented agreements for co-management and cooperation going back, I think, 20 years at least. And this site actually kind of is an example of how that coordination is so important. You can see in the photo on the left of the slide is a view of Highway 199, which is right along Cedar Rustic, and the adjacent lands right after the Smith River Complex fire in 2023. And during that wildfire, Cedar Rustic, which is flat and right next to the highway, was almost cleared and used as a log deck by the incident management team. And it was only because of the cooperation between the tribe and the Forest Service and their close relationship that the tribe was easily able to communicate the importance of the site and protect it, even in the middle of this disaster. Now let me tell you about the second project, the Klamath River Wildfire Resilience Project. It's located in the western Klamath Mountains in Humboldt County within the Six Rivers National Forest. Historically, the western Klamath Mountains experienced frequent human and lightning ignitions, which help maintain forest health. Fire suppression over the last 100 years has resulted in high fuel loads and degraded habitats that the Western Klamath Restoration Partnership, or WKRP, is working to remediate. This $500,000 grant to the Mid-Klamath Watershed Council, or MCWIC, will implement critical fuel reduction treatments on 150 to 250 acres in the wildland-urban interface in the Klamath River watershed along State Highway 96. Like the first project, this project also highlights collaboration and partnership. MCWIC is part of the WKRP, a partnership which is led by the Karuk tribe, the Salmon River Restoration Council, and the U.S. Forest Service, and includes many other stakeholders as well. This project is part of a greater plan to create and maintain a contiguous area of shaded fuel breaks around the communities of Soames Bar and Orleans, shown on the right of this slide. This project was prioritized in the Orleans-Soames Bar Community Wildfire Protection Plan and by the WKRP. The detailed map in the middle of the slide shows the locations of manual treatments in green, outlined in pink, and an aerial of the project areas on the left of the slide. This also will show you, so these other areas are being treated with other funding. So while these particular grants, you're not seeing a lot of match brought, they're part of ongoing efforts and phases and treatments of these areas where there's a lot of federal funding, CAL FIRE funding, and contributions by the tribe and nonprofits and other groups who are involved. Here's a beauty shot of Soames Bar with the Klamath running through it, just so you can see how amazing this landscape is that folks are working to protect. This project consists of forest restoration and cultural resources revitalization through manual and mechanical treatments, which will prepare the area for prescribed fire. Treatments and ongoing management were jointly planned by the Forest Service, the Karuk Tribe, and Mikwik. All this work is in Karuk ancestral territory and will be carried out in close coordination with the Karuk Tribe. Here's some photos of current conditions in the project area. You can see a lot of small trees. These will be thinned to reduce fuel loads and improve habitat. Extending shaded fuel breaks and improving access and egress along the northwestern region of the communities of Orleans and Soames Bar. These treatment areas are also important for habitat. They're next to anadromous fish streams and within elk winter range habitat. Thank you so much for your consideration of the project. We've got four people on the Zoom from the project teams: Rachel McCain, the Natural Resources Director for the Talua Dene Nation, and Donna Pepin from the Forest Service, District Ranger for Six Rivers National Forest for Del Norte Project, and Eric Nelson, the Fire and Forestry Deputy Director at Mikwik, and Luna Latimer, the Mikwik Director for the Soames Bar Project. I'll be happy to answer any questions you might have before lunch.
Thank you, Joel. Are there any questions? No?
I just have a comment. I appreciate all the coordination that's done between the tribes and all the other partners and the nonprofits. That's amazing. Thanks.
Yeah. All right. Do you want to move approval?
Sure. Move Brian? Approval.
Mark? Second. Are there public comments?
No public comments.
All right.
We do. Sorry, we have one public comment.
Oh, we do. Okay.
Go ahead, Rachel.
Hello, everyone. My name is Rachel McCain. I'm the Natural Resources Department Director for the Talua Dene Nation. I would just like to thank the Conservancy for your support and welcome your investment in this decades-long partnership that we have between the nation and the U.S. Forest Service, as well as other members of the Smith River Collaborative. We were very happy to take your staff up around the town of Gaspe and the historic site of Massier-Setenay a couple weeks ago. This project focuses on centering traditional Talua stewardship methods within national forest planning and relies on the very strong partnership that we have built over the years and over the generations. Community protection in this area is intertwined and inextricable from cultural resource protection. And funding of this project would continue to support our, you know, existence and our tribal programs, our staffing, and our youth development. So thank you again. Just wanted to, you know, express our gratitude here. And, thank you.
Thank you, Ms. McCain. All right.
We have one more public comment.
All right.
Hello.
Go ahead.
Apologies, Donna.
Hello, everyone. This is Donna Pepin, the acting district ranger here on the Gaspe Ranger District, Smith River, NRA. First off, great job, Joel. You did an amazing job representing us, so thank you very much. And going out with both Joel and Michael was definitely a pleasure, and I'm glad that you both enjoyed it. We are deeply grateful to the Coastal Conservancy for funding a portion of the Massey-Sietne project and Cedar Rustic project. This all would not be possible without the funding now or moving into the future. Just want to express our gratitude from the Ranger District itself, and the forest looks forward to implementing the project in the spirit of continued co-management of Massey-Sietne, all because of you. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Ms. Pepin. Are there any other public comments?
No other public comments.
All right. We have a motion and a second that we approve item 21. Paul, will you call the roll?
Ms. Cavalieri?
Aye.
Mr. Cash?
Aye.
Ms. Gutierrez-Groudage?
Aye.
Ms. Jiri?
Aye.
Chair Bosco?
Aye.
Item 21 is approved.
All right. We now move to a hopefully brief part of our agenda. We have public or conservancy member comments. Do we have any comment from members of the conservancy? Any speeches or all right. Any public comments on non-agenda items?
Nobody has their hands raised, so no public comment.
All right. Do we need a closed session, Brian?
No, we don't need a closed session.
That's good. Very good. Very good. I'm glad you had to sit through.
Well done. The time.
Do you practice for this?
In the mirror.
It's a good thing you went to law school, huh? All right. Our next meeting, let's see if I have it here. Amy, why don't you just say our next meeting is, I know it's Seal Beach, right?
Right. April 23rd, our meeting will be in Seal Beach. We do have a project tour the day before on April 22nd, and that will include the Los Cerritos wetlands. And we do need a quorum of board members at the board meeting in person on April 23rd. So start planning your Seal Beach April trip. Thank you.
And will you just reiterate real quickly, we always need at least four bodies at our meeting, right? Actual people there.
Yes. Right. We need, so this is under temporary rules that were passed a couple years ago by the legislature and have been extended, but it allows for some people, some board members, to join remotely, like Jeremiah Hallisey did today. But we have to have a quorum of board members in person, and a quorum is four board members.
Okay. Well, thank you all. And
I just had one announcement. Just for the budget nerds out there, AB 107 did pass the Senate today, so.
Yes.
Just have to pass the Assembly.
In other words, all the work we did just now, it counts?
Yes.
Good. It's not Washington, D.C., where that might have gone to waste. Huh? All right. Well, thank you all, and thanks to our IT folks, and all of you did a great job there. And thank you all, staff, and we'll see you at our next meeting. Meeting's adjourned.